Time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy's here. Renee's here. Alex Lindsay's here. We're going to talk about, of course, the iPhone 10, now that we've all had it for a little bit of time, and give you some ins and outs. How much does it cost to make? How much money will it make Apple? We'll also talk about where Apple stashes that money. It's not Ireland anymore. All coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 583, recorded Tuesday, November 7th, 2017. The Jersey Fudge. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texture.com/twit. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/MacBreak and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. And by Video Blocks, by Storyblocks. Uncage your creativity. Get all the stock video you need for only $149 a year. Visit videoblocks.com/MacBreak to save on millions of studio quality clips from VideoBlocks. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. The whole team is assembled, starting with Renee Ritchie of iMore.com. Thank you so much for letting Georgia Dow use your studio on Sunday for Twit.
Thank you, Lee. But now, I mean, I'm going to look like a poor alternative, a poor second place.
It was disorienting to see her sitting where you're sitting now.
When I tried to do the show today, Leo, I had to upgrade Skype, and then it started asking me all these personal questions before I could use it. Apparently now I was born in 1945, and I have no idea what my birthday is. So if I get locked out, it's just because I fed them a bunch of lies.
You lied to Skype? What's wrong with you? You devil, you.
A pack of lies.
Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times wearing... Now, this is a new hat. You'll have to tell us about this here.
Oh, well, this is my Boston Marathon 2017 hat. Nice. That I bought in lieu of actually running the marathon.
Boston strong-ish, I think is what we call it.
Well, Boston lazy but supportive.
Also in studio, it's great to have Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps.
Hello, hello.
You, I know, like your headphone jack, I'm thinking you did not upgrade to an iPhone 10.
I did. I'm still waiting.
You did?
We had a server issue. And on the West Coast, and I had to VPN into my DC facility to order, but it took me 3 to 5 minutes to do that and to realize that I should do that.
Yeah.
And now I'm waiting like November 17th. No, I have gotten over it. So I'm going to, you know, I
after this show, you may not, you may be a little bit regretful.
We're going to ruin you, Alex.
No, I only want it for the. Not for the Animoji, but for the facial animation.
Right.
I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity there.
Renee has one. I have one. Andy has one. Andy's going to have two when he gets his review unit.
I'm in Andy's problem right
you
now.
You have two. Let me see the space gray. So you have the white and the space gray.
Yeah.
Oops, two.
Lower down.
Which one do you like better?
You know, I ordered the space gray because it looks like such an object. But then I agree with what Andy's been saying, and that is the silver, the shiny, shiny stainless steel, and this makes it look almost like an original iPhone from the front angle, and I like that so much that I'm a little bit sad now.
Is that stainless? So it's not, it looks like chromed, it's chromed, but it's actually stainless.
It's stainless steel, and the black one is vapor coated stainless steel, right. So it's very similar to what they did with the watches.
I mocked you last week. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I mocked you last week because you said it's the best damn product Apple's ever made. Okay, you were right. I'll say it here. I've had it since Friday.
I would argue that the 10.5-inch iPad was better than the iPhone 8, and AirPods might have been just better as a product than iPhone 7. But I think of everything Apple's released this year and going back, this is just it's such a well-designed, like, it just the feeling in your hand. I think Panzerino said it's like an Apple Watch made into a phone, which is a great way of describing it.
That's interesting. It is kind of, isn't it? But now Alex is looking at it now.
It's the first time I've touched it.
Yeah, the screen is spectacular. Amazing. And by the way, display
feels, it just It feels like you spent a lot of money on it. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you did.
Yeah, you did. You did. And evidently, it turns out there's a lot of people that are willing to spend a lot of money on a phone.
Yeah, the upward price elasticity is amazing.
Yeah. There was something, we talked about this on Sunday on Twit. There's something about that $1,000 barrier. It's not that it is that, I mean, it's a few hundred dollars more expensive than your previous phone. And that's a few hundred bucks amortized over a couple of years. It's not the end of the world, but something about psychologically about going through that $1,000 barrier.
I asked people in line and most of them were like, it costs how much? I don't know. I'm getting it for 20 or 30 bucks a month. And that's the only number they saw.
That's really what Apple's done. That's, I think, smart. Yeah. And the 20, 30 bucks a month is that all?
I don't know what the US price conversion is.
I think it's like more
30,
than that.
Yeah. For how many years?
Well, normally it's a 2 year. It's
well, you
2
give
years.
It back though, so you don't own it. That's the whole thing. So you're basically a leasing model.
I think I did the math, and I think it ends up being like $1,300 instead of $1,200, something like that. You know,
it's a little more expensive. The Apple one should be zero rated, so it should be like leasing a car for 0% interest.
Oh. The only negative on that is if you've damaged it, you're screwed.
Well, you get Apple Care Plus automatically with it, so you get two incidents.
You know, I'm going to probably have to do – I don't know why I didn't do that. That actually sounds like a smart way to do it. So you're not paying extra. You're just spreading it out.
Yeah.
And you get Apple Care Plus.
I'm not good with payments, so I just buy everything.
I do too.
Like, I'm just like, oh, I'll miss a payment.
Well, I'll be honest. Most of the time with a phone, I use it for a few months, then the next phone comes.
Exactly.
And it's Android.
Totally. Totally.
I have a feeling.
But to your point, Leo, like,
I'll be using
DisplayMate and the
while.
Display on this one, I can't get over it.
So DisplayMate said it's practically textbook in terms of color accuracy, the best screen they've ever looked at. You know, and I trust these guys. Sonera does a very.
I was going to get a color accurate monitor, but then I decided just to get an iPhone.
One of the things they said is that they have managed to calibrate each device accurately.
Right.
Yeah, they're doing individual sub-pixel level calibration across every unit.
And
you need for color management, but a lot of places just aren't set up to do it.
Well, I think we talked about this, that the problem with the Pixel 2 XL is it's batch color calibrated. And so there'll be some significant variation in different units. But in this, DisplayMate said, close to textbook perfect calibration and performance. Superbly accurate, high performance, gorgeous display. Now Apple's quick to say it's still an OLED. It's an OLED. Burn-in is always going to be an issue. We suggest, Apple says, you turn the screen off time to its lowest setting, 30 seconds. We highly recommend you use automatic screen dimming. Oh, Alex is looking at a movie.
I'm watching Deadpool.
Is it? It's UHD,
it's
right?
HDR. It's HDR, Dolby Vision, and HDR 10.
It's funny. I watched Deadpool on my new Apple 4K Apple TV.
How did it look?
Because it gets you out to get automatically upgraded. Looks good.
You have an HDR TV?
The Netflix stuff is amazing because the Marvel Netflix stuff is all muddy, but you watch it in HDR and suddenly there's color everywhere.
It's amazing. Yeah. And the blacks are very nice. I watched Stranger Things. There's a scene, no spoiler at all, but there is a scene in Stranger Things where two people are brightly lit in a black room, a dark room. And in HDR, that black is black. There's no artifacting. There's no banding. It is lights out. And because of it, they pop out of the screen. Right. So it's 3D without any 3D.
Well, you know, I was talking to someone. I was actually talking to Colleen about compression.
Colleen Kelly.
Yeah. And
she's the expert now.
The world expert.
Our chief engineer here. And then she went to Google, and then now she's at Facebook, and she's the world expert in everything having to do with video, I think, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
She's where I go for school, you know. And
that's saying a lot. Yeah. I mean, you're my expert, so.
No. Like, I spend a lot of time with, and she, I can only handle a couple hours at a time before I get a headache, you know, just trying to absorb the information.
But, is this off YouTube? Where are you watching Deadpool?
That's off of iTunes. Off your.
It's off my iTunes. This is the upgraded 4K HDR.
That's right.
And I really think that, it's great.
But she was saying, you know, one of the things that her opinion is if you're going to do 4K or HDR, you want to just throw a lot of bandwidth at people because the if they have a 4K TV, 4K HDR TV, they probably have a good internet connection. You know, there's like this, like, you know, why do you buy that if you don't have that?
Right. And the best thing about the iPhone is you don't have to worry about the HDMI because right now HDMI cables are causing the most headaches for everybody just to get 444 out of from the source to the television. It's like playing roulette whether your cable will work or not, but it just works on an iPhone because there's no cable involved.
And a lot of it's the run, by the way. We've been doing 4K for a long time with monitors, and it turns out how long that run is is a big deal.
Interesting.
You know, you have to, we find
and
that
some of the high ones aren't shielded, Alex, which is causing all sorts of problems for people.
Yeah. Yeah. The, we find that over 6 feet, it's, that's when it really becomes an issue, of whether it's going to work or not. But yeah, so, I mean, like my home connection now, I mean, tests it like, except for yesterday when Comcast went down.
yeah, well, that was weird. What?
Yeah. Yeah.
So let me show you. This is probably a good shot as any for high dynamic range because there's a brightly lit sky in the background. I don't actually see any detail in the sky, but I do see detail in the white tent behind it. And, of course, there's plenty of detail in the black jacket, the T-shirt. This is a kind of a good example of high dynamic range in video.
It'd be interesting to get it. Wait. I think I can download. Where are you?
It's also depending on the studio because they get to choose which version of 4K they give you and whether it is true HDR, true 4K, or upsampled.
Yeah.
So there is some variance in the content. Like, I think a lot of this stuff shot in 4K.
It's funny that you picked Deadpool because that's what I picked at random to take a look at the 4K UHD HDR. It's a great movie, and I happen to own it. But even
Apple
just,
demoing La
even
La Land
just
and
the
Woman.
Screen and the icons, the text, and of course anybody at home seeing this is not seeing it because we stream 720p if you're watching the video. And if you're listening to the audio, you're really not seeing it. But just in the hand, it really does look superb.
And the amazing thing is if you put your old iPhone next to it, it looks the same. Like the icons don't look different colors.
No. And that actually is amazing because typically, in fact, I compared it on another show to a Note 8 screen. I compared the red in the Authy. Red is always challenging for any video, right? Red in the Authy icon to the Note 8. And the Note 8 had a pink tinge to it. Mm-hmm. It was a little poppier and brighter. This is it's a very real natural red. It's perfect as far as I can tell. And it's just as, you know, throughout, very well, and you don't have to trust our limited eyeballs.
Where were you in Deadpool? Yeah.
And I think there's a couple of differences here. One of them is that this is going to be if you're not been an iPhone user, you've probably been one for like 5 or 6 years. This is going to be your first OLED screen. And so you're going to get a dramatic improvement over what you've seen before. If you are going from an Android phone like I am, it wasn't quite so dramatic for me. I thought it was very, very nice. It didn't blow me away, but I could certainly appreciate how good it was. But just in case you're being scared off by, oh, well, I don't have HDR content. I don't care about HDR. On the train ride to New York City yesterday, I was actually watching an episode of Columbo that I ripped from DVD over the weekend. And even that was just a really satisfying amount of detail and color, even for a DVD quality rip of a TV show that was filmed in 1974. So, yeah, you're going to be really, really happy with it.
Alex is trying to pull up the same frame on his iPhone 6S just to compare it. That's an LCD screen. Apple's always done good screens, and their LCDs are nothing to sneeze at either. OLED can be challenging because the temptation with OLED is to make it brighter and poppier.
It's an immature technology, and it can be the absolute worst panel on earth if you don't do it very carefully.
I have the 4K.
But you can also –
you can actually see significant differences in the same scene. It actually looks a little brighter on the 6S. But in terms of detail, what's interesting is it's because it's brighter, you're seeing more detail on the 6S above it. We should turn your screen down or mine up.
Well, HDR also kind of can save you energy because you do tend to overdrive the screen because you want to see details that are hidden in shadow, whereas the HDR screen will show you that detail even if you've got the backlight or the lighting of the brightness of the screen turned down. So I think even people
that's
going to
be my
iPhone
challenge.
iPhone 7.
Is that I tend to turn mine up to 11 most of the time.
Turn it to 11.
You can go to 11 and
what's interesting is even though I turned up the brightness, the blacks are still inky and there's not a lot of detail in it. So I don't know. I prefer the bottom one, which is the iPhone 10. But
yeah, I think it looks more number one is it looks less blue.
Yeah, it looks more natural.
And it looks more natural.
And at home, you're not seeing the difference at all. By the way, just look at the guy's head. The flesh tone in the bald guy's head is so much better.
Yeah, it's a lot
and
bluer.
HDR 10 and Dolby Vision are different. Like Dolby Vision does very careful frame by frame HDR, where I think HDR 10 does a line through the entire video to
calibrate it. And is this Dolby Vision or HDR 10?
I'm not sure.
I know that Apple TV does both, but I don't know what the iPhone does.
Yeah, so does the iPhone. Okay. Yeah, it does both.
Okay. So it depends on who, what Marvel.
The studios get to pick everything.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I also want to make people who bought the iPhone 8 and iPhone 8 Plus not feel quite so bad if they are now thinking, oh, God, did I screw up? I also find that it's, again, side by side between like the Galaxy S8, the iPhone 10, and the iPhone 8, you can definitely see the difference between screens. I don't think that any one of these on their that any of the other screens on their own look poor. It's sometimes when you when you're a reviewer and you do have access to every phone made. So don't feel like as though the iPhone 8 is an inferior screen. It's excellent. I've been carrying that one around for 2 or 3 weeks now. And even after using the iPhone 10 as my daily driver since Friday, I was using the iPhone 8 as a video recorder during my stuff on New York yesterday. And it still didn't look terrible, even when I was switching between those two.
Alex, tell me what we're looking at. This is the DisplayMate color gamut chart. The blue is sRGB, and of course, as you'd expect, DCI-P3 is slightly larger, the cinema gamut. And then is the white line the iPhone? Because it's bigger than all of them, and it certainly matches up very... Is that the human eye? Okay. So where's the... I guess the iPhone's not on this.
Well, the iPhone isn't the...
DCI-P3 is red, yeah.
So those dots, so that's...
So outside of...
It matches very accurately, in fact, right, to the P3. That's what they're saying.
Right.
A close match to the standard gamuts. Oh, all right. Okay. So those dots are measurements, I would guess.
Yeah, you can vary. Like the Pixel 2 only does, I think, 95 or 96% of P3, and the Pixel 2 XL does 100% of P3. So right. It can vary depending on the individual phone, too. Right.
Anyway, I don't know anything about this stuff, so I'm just...
And then there's Rec 2020, Leo, and sRGB Enhanced.
Here's color 12. Accuracy. I don't know. I don't know anything about it. So you guys have to look at it and decide for yourselves.
It's graphs and numbers.
It looks good.
Look at the triangle on the other one. It's not quite so big as triangle on the first one.
Yeah. To Andy's point, they're both iPhone 8 and iPhone 10 both have incredibly good displays. The difference with the OLED is it let them go edge to edge because they could literally fold the panel around and put the display controllers underneath it.
Right.
And it also, when you tilt them past 30 degrees, LCD will just get sort of darker, where OLED, in this case, will shift blue.
Right. Slight blue shift. It's noticeable. No. Not on this screen, but if I put a white screen, let me put the calendar up, you'll see the slight blue shift, but it's not bad. It's just very...
And you can still read it.
I really think that Apple found the right balance here. If you paid extra for the iPhone 10, you will appreciate the difference. If you decided that the iPhone 8 was good enough for you, you won't notice any... You won't be disappointed with that display either. It's not as though you're getting a cut-rate experience. You're just getting a slightly better one that, again, it might... cause some arguments if you and your spouse are in every other year we buy the new phone and whoever else gets the old phone. That might cause some arguments there, but other than that, I think you're still up to are the features of the iPhone 8 and 8 Plus good enough for you, and do you not want to spend $1,000 for the 64 gigabyte version of this?
I think it's the camera and the facial recognition, and not really the facial being able to unlock your phone. I think what we're going to see over the next year is a lot of development of having a lot of fun with people's faces.
If you think Animoji karaoke is annoying,
that's just getting people. No, but again,
get ready, kids.
I do think that there is going to be a point where you can make actual professional content from your phone. You know, one of the big things that's kept that from working really well is facial animation, and being able to now just literally grab your phone and animate all your characters shouldn't be seen as trivial. I mean, that's a huge feature.
You could make Return of the Planet of the Apes.
Well, you could do... Here's the funny thing. We're not talking about feature films. You know, what I'm talking about is that if you want to do commentary or comic commentary on YouTube you know, all kinds of stuff.
No more do we have to use Hitler from Downfall. We can make our own Hitler videos.
Well, I mean, the thing we haven't even, you know, if you look at the merge of that and the ability to manipulate video using, 3D, you literally could get to a point where you could pick up your phone and reanimate someone talking. I mean, I think we've all seen Obama say other things than what he said.
Oh,
JFK.
So you could have a JFK head model in this phone that would just...
Well,
say
you don't even have to have a JFK head model. You just have to have the representation as it applies to that. You know, so basically you analyze some footage. It will build that internally of what needs to happen. And then you could literally just pick up your phone and start talking, and someone else on the other video will just be saying what you wanted them to say.
You could have us in remotely as Animoji, Leo. And emoji Renee and Al and Andy on either side. Did you see the Clips thing that Apple put up on the website for the new version of Clips app that's coming soon?
No.
So I always thought that they have portrait lighting and portrait mode. The next thing would be portrait backgrounds. And I thought we'd get that with iOS 12 next year. But they've built it into Clips. It's got these scenes. They showed them at the iPhone demo last month where you can put yourself inside the Millennium Falcon. It's a 360-degree Millennium Falcon that you can turn around in. If you go right back up a little bit, it's like the hologram on the right there. You can put yourself in like a Blade Runner Tokyo, the Millennium Falcon, whatever that bridge is, and it's a complete world that you turn around in and you are superimposed into.
Wow. That's using the true depth camera as well.
Yeah, because it pulls the depth data and then differentiates you from the background and creates virtual background.
That comes out day after tomorrow. That's soon. So 11.9, that will be available. So that's going to be – yeah, I would love to see Apple do stuff as a demo anyway, showing what that true face camera can do, and then – love to see third parties.
Is there an
AR kit like interface for it, Renee?
For the
Face ID for the true depth camera.
So it's just a part of AR kit now. So you get the face matching. As part of AR kit.
Okay. Because I was thinking AR is being looking out. This is looking in. But I guess it can track you into
AR environments. So basically it takes the depth data and tracks your face. But the other thing that's really cool about this is the attention awareness that's built into it, because it can tell when you're looking at it. So it'll do things like you get a private message and it knows you're looking at the phone. It'll unfurl that message and you can tap and go right to it. Or the phone rings and you pick it up and it realizes that you're looking at it. So it dims the ringer. And right now they're very simple examples. But once the phone knows that you're in possession and doing things with it, it can start doing a bunch of contextually aware things for you as well. And we get one step closer towards that sort of.
Yeah, somebody asked me on the radio show, how come my phone gets quieter when I pick it up? And I said, that's a new feature that's in the settings. Yeah. You could turn it off, but it's part of the attention settings.
Yeah.
And I
agree. This
is just a little bit of a taste of what could potentially.
And again, I think that over the next year, I think we're going to see an explosion of tools that are used that aren't just animated poop. You know, I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities to use this in a more useful way. And it's going to be a really interesting. And I think that the next version, my guess is the next version is going to take the information that they're using to get your face and put it on the other camera and go out. And then that kind of backs them into a real AR solution, you know, that is much closer to what Tango was doing.
Eye tracking is pretty. It's pretty interesting to think about what they could do just with eye tracking, just with the user interface. If they know where are you looking at this moment, what has your attention right now? And I'm not talking about like I'm using a mouse with my mind. It's a pointer is moving where my eye is, but just it intuits that wow, this guy is really confused because his eyes are darting all over the screen right now as if he's looking for something. Maybe I will use that information to surface a feature that is kind of buried in the interface right now, or even if the for betas of an app, if developer wants to enable a tracking mode and simply say that please keep an eye, give me a heat map of where people are looking in my interface. And if you're thinking that wow, I really thought the most important place to put this feature was going to be the upper right hand corner, but that's not where people are looking. Okay, I know I got to put the most important stuff on the left edge, kind of close to the bottom. It's my favorite kind of feature where it's not the one thing. It's not like it unlocks your phone and that's what it does. And if once you're past that, it stops being cool. It's where you just tell a whole hundreds of thousands or millions of developers, we have a technology so that it can read a face in 3D and tell you what is happening with that face. Do whatever you want with that feature. That's when you start to. The really cool stuff is going to happen in 5 or 6 months, where we see all these new apps from people who are finally getting their phones and can finally develop things without a simulator, finally finding the awesome on their own.
Yep.
I have to say, Face ID works quite reliably. Now, I just turned off the attention feature, because the way it works is by default is you have to look at it with your eyes open. When you turn it off, it works even faster. Is there a big
and from more angles?
Yeah. Is there a big security issue with that? I feel like
the security issue with it is that let's say like Alex grabs your phone and holds it up to your face. If he can get it to see your eyes, nose, and mouth, it'll unlock for him.
Big deal. Or somebody could do it while I'm asleep. Big deal.
Yes.
I know. So if you trust the people around you, which I do,
yes,
It sure makes it faster. I don't have a problem with it anyway.
And if it's don't, you can squeeze it, and that'll force passcode. If you're like falling asleep on a train and you don't want people around you to get your phone, just squeeze it for a second.
Yeah, squeeze both sides, buttons on either side. I didn't like, and I think I mentioned this last week, the idea that I had to swipe up after Face ID worked. But Face ID is so transparent and quick that really it feels like you're unlocking the phone by swiping up because it's just instant.
That's something I've really noticed. It was bumming me out for the first couple of days because I was instinctively using it where I glance at it, I look at the lock, animating its unlocking, and then I swipe up and thinking that, oh gosh, it's actually slower than Face ID, or I really hate that it's a two-step thing. It took me a few days to start to trust it enough. I was actually just telling myself inside my mind, don't wait, just hold it, just use it as you would normally would, and just act as though there's no lock in this and you just have to swipe up. I'm slowly starting to trust it. And it's really starting to pay off very well.
But you can actually swipe up before the padlock opens.
Yes,
exactly. It's the realization that it unlocks, but then it animates to confirm that it's unlocked. It's best to use it just like as you would Touch ID. Assume it's going to work and be ready for the occasional what the hell's going on. It's not unlocking. But for the first time, just assume it's going to work, and then you will not experience a delay.
I'll be honest. I never want to go back to a physical home button. This is actually an improvement.
I launched 1Password, and it opened without me even knowing what was going on. Like, why is this? Right. Oh, Face ID. And
I at that love moment, that, by the way.
At that moment, Leo, I mean, God help me, a Touch ID felt cumbersome. It's like I'm too lazy to even Touch ID now. It's just doing stuff for me.
I wouldn't agree that strongly. I think it works exceptionally well. I do even, and this is someone speaking with all the expertise of having had this for 5 days. I kind of like the fact that unlocking the phone via Touch ID is an overlapping action, where like particularly on my Android phone where it's mounted on the back. So while I'm taking it out of my pocket, my finger just happens to hit that place. And I know that by the time it is anywhere near where I want to use it, it's unlocked. So essentially the act of taking it out of my pocket is identical to the act of unlocking it, so to speak. It's a little bit different when at some point after you look at it, it's going to unlock. It's hard to really explain. I don't think it's a fault, but I think they're two different technologies, both of which work exceptionally well. I think Apple is going to gain the most saturation from this simply by the point of view that they're releasing it in the first week of November, the first week that people are now wearing gloves every day. And that's what's going to get people to say, you know what? I was on the fence until I remembered how many times I have to take off my gloves or use a stylus or use the special wacky gloves.
Now, Andy. Yeah. I have to take off my Canadian ski mask.
Article on Fast Company's design site by Jesus Diaz says the iPhone X is a user experience nightmare. How did we go from the most elegant user experience ever created to this mess?
Well, this is where Jesus Diaz ended up.
he shows Joanna Stern's quick one sheet on how to use it, which is actually very useful. To wake up the screen, tap anywhere to open the control center, swipe down from the right ear, notifications left ear. How to do a
screen. The buttons are like a Konami code now, Leo.
But I have to say, as confusing as you might, I don't feel like this is confusing, but when you look at it printed like this, you might say, it is so intuitive and natural. I can't agree. I think, I want to cop to the fact that I wanted to hate this phone. I wanted to be, I was very suspicious of all new user ID, dropping Touch ID, which worked so nicely.
It looks different than it feels. Like when you have it in your hand, it's not the same as when you're just looking at it on a screen.
I did not want to come to this. I was not prepared psychologically to say this was a good phone, and particularly because of the price. I felt bad telling people, oh, you really want to get a phone that starts at $1,000. What can I say? Yeah. I don't think there's a single place that didn't check all the Mark, great.
I will say that I think it's really important when you're reading reviews, particularly the negative ones, that I think that no phone since the first iPhone is so dependent on experience. I think that people who've been using this every day for 2 or 3 weeks are going to have a different opinion than they did after 2 or 3 days. Not that 2 or 3 days is ever enough to do a review, but sometimes it's what you have to do. I'm still kind of on the fence about application switching. I really, I, I, I have not trained my thumb correctly to reveal the deck of cards and swipe to the app I want.
Somebody told me a better way to do this. Watch this. So this is, I was going and holding, swiping up and holding. You don't have to. You just swipe. No, what? I'm not. I haven't.
You drag instead of flick.
You just go like that.
Yeah.
It's a left turn. It's a right turn.
And you can go sideways. You don't have to bring up the multitasking to switch apps. You can just swipe sideways.
And this is phenomenal. Yeah. This is, so it used to be you'd force touch the left side and swiped over. Now you just swipe the bottom. It is so much of a better experience, so much of a natural. This is a massive improvement.
Yeah, and also remember that if you go into the iBook store, you will find a manual, a really nice, extremely well-written, extremely well-illustrated manual. I've downloaded it, but I haven't read it yet because, again, it's my first week, and I just want to have the user experience of no external information yet. But it's not less of a complaint about how it works than an understanding that, again, you had to learn a lot of new stuff when you got the first iPhone. This is the lack of the home button. The first iPhone without a home button means that there's a lot of stuff that you're going to have, old behaviors that are no longer useful and new behaviors that are as good and if not better than what you're replacing it with.
Don't be thrown. You probably wouldn't want to go back and forth, although I've been going back and forth from an iPad to an iPhone X.
I'm going back and forth to iPhone 8, and I'm pulling up Control Center all the damn time.
Yeah. So you really want to pick one UI. And it's weird that Apple has effectively three iOS UIs now, one for the iPad, one for the older iPhones, one for the iPhone 10.
So I asked them about that, and they said they didn't want to change. For people, the whole point of iPhone 8 was to give a familiar experience to people, something that they were used to. Yeah. And they didn't think the consistency between iPhone 10 and iPhone 8 was as important as the consistency between iPhone 5 all the way up to iPhone 8 for people who were just upgrading to that one.
Now, do you think that they'll have an iPhone? Like, do you think that they'll continue the iPhone 8 line, like to iPhone 9 or whatever? This is really the last one, right? This is the last one of that generation.
My big question is, when they come out with two iPhone 10s next year, is one going to be smaller and then this one, or is it going to be this one and a bigger one?
I'm interested to see how it will feel to have a larger, how it would feel to have a larger one of these. It's a little bit without the screen, the screen being shoved up a full centimeter inside your hand when you're holding it. The bottom is a little bit more awkward to get to, particularly if you're trying to one-hand it. I'm curious to see what it would be like if they decided to make a larger one. It would be an interesting way to do sort of a take on the iPad Mini. If they wanted to do like the iPad Nano, where we're not talking about a crazy, stupid, big iPhone here. But if you're saying, let's take the frame size of the iPhone 8 Plus and try to go edge-to-edge OLED like this, that would be super interesting. That's the sort of thing that would make me I do have a collection of pocket keyboards, and there have been times where I have been forced by circumstance to be the guy sitting in a room at the family event writing something on 45-minute deadline because the world changed while I was in the car to the VFW function hall. If you make it put a screen that big inside an iPhone 8 frame, that now becomes a practical productivity space. So I would like to see them try to do that. I'm sure they've already built them, but they're waiting for the right moment, or they've already laughed it off. But that would be a new thing, a really new thing.
What I find amazing is how Apple can consistently take something that was perfectly fine
and make it look old and obsolete,
and make it look like if car companies figured this out, they would.
That's why we put fins on Cadillacs.
I know, but it's not. It's always like it is like I have the most modern phone. This phone is horrible.
This is the biggest leap forward, though, that they've taken it in quite some time.
What I just noticed is how clunky, the last form factor feels.
You don't want to use the.
And I felt like the smaller phone, the non plus, was too small, and I felt like this one. I've always felt like this one was a little too big.
This is the sweet spot,
I do think that the X is in the sweet spot for me. Yeah. It's got the right screen real estate. My hand is much more comfortable over it.
I hate to put a case on it. However,
I know.
Given the cost of repairs,
I already ordered the case. I don't have the phone yet. I have the case. I have the little cover for
the which case? The silicone, the leather, the folio, third party.
First of all, I don't do Apple cases, but I started with the Spigen, just the rubber bumper plus back. But I have to say, I'm concerned about the front. It's $270 to fix the front, so I'm actually doing what you're doing, Alex. Interestingly enough, I got a wallet case.
I like the wallet because I don't have to carry a wallet anymore. And I lose my phone. But if they're both in the same place, I never lose them.
And that now, so that covers the front and the back. This is a cheap one, $30 one from Davis.
I'm pretty into these.
Well, you know what I ended up doing? I ordered like four of them, all different features. The one thing that this doesn't have that I kind of want is that you could take the case out, that it's magnetically attached.
Oh, yeah.
Because then, for the shows at least, I don't have to have the wallet with
me. Just to make sure the magnet doesn't interfere with wireless charging if you use wireless charging.
Yes, well, and I read the reviews, of course, and they say they don't. So you're right. Okay, I will be very interested to see. this one is from Davis.
For people buying
them. Antique leather. It's very beat up, which is kind of nice. It doesn't look like a fancy iPhone 10 in here. It looks like somebody's dad's wallet. But and it has the wrist strap doubles as a rubber band to close it up, and I for $40 this actually is pretty good. Although I'm going to try some other ones just to see.
The only important thing is you never want the cards to be on the back because then the inductive charging will go through them and might erase the magnet.
That's right.
So you always
want
the cards to.
This
be on
works
the
fine
flat.
With wireless charging.
Yep.
That's interesting. So, I mean, I've used wireless charging since it first was available on many Android phones. That's another thing I don't want to live without is wireless charging. In every way, this phone kind of sets you up. Now, you saw the Samsung commercial, so I suppose we should show that.
Yeah.
This Samsung felt like this is an opportunity to gain some ground. I think this could backfire on them because, as it turns out, this phone is too freaking good.
It's very similar to their Sheeple commercials from a few years ago.
Yeah, but this ends up selling the phone to me. But go ahead, watch. This is, they're lined up from 2007 for the original iPhone.
Guess what I just got?
Now 2010.
I used to be. Should have been an iPhone 4. Continuity editing this.
Yeah.
Hello again.
Hi. Oh, wait a minute. She's got a Samsung phone. She's got a stylus. Wait a minute.
He's dating above his station.
They both fall in the lake. His phone no longer works. Her
the 2016
Samsung.
iPhone actually was water resistant. I'm just going to keep continuity editing this.
Well, it's water resistant versus it has certification.
The dongle. Again, I agree, not a great thing. Wireless charging, no dongle on the Samsung. He put his in the drawer. Now he's purchased a Samsung device. And writes, guess what I just got? Oh, by the way, pause that, because he's walking by the line for the new phone, and there's a guy with a notch in his hair. But you know who got that notch cut as well? Marcus Brownlee. He did. He got a notch. It looks better on him than this weirdo. But that's a little dig also at Apple. Yeah. I have a Note 8. I thought the Note 8 screen was gorgeous. I wasn't crazy about the 2:1. It was kind of tall. And this fingerprint reader is a pain in the butt where it is. This is an improvement in every respect. My iPhone has not been my daily driver for 4 years. I've been using Pixels and the like. This is easily the best phone out there right now. Easily. It's the only negative is the cost. Any other negatives you can think of? I mean, Face ID works fine. The new gestures are very intuitive.
I mean, there are like the Face ID system still for some people, especially people in families where they want to have multiple people registered or businesses where they want to have multiple people registered.
Yeah. But you're limited to one face. You just give the other person the code, the 6-digit code.
Yeah, totally. But I mean, like previously you could have a code and not have to give it to them if you wanted them to have quick biometric access.
Yeah, I do that with Lisa. I gave her a fingerprint on my iPhone, my old iPhone. I don't think it's a big deal to say, well, what I did is I made the code be something she knows.
Yeah.
You do want the code to be something easy and fast for you to remember and enter because you will be doing it a lot, at least initially, because Face ID doesn't work in every environment. But what's really interesting is when it doesn't work and you give it the code, it has now then learned that environment.
Right.
So there is no question in my mind doing what Apple said it would do, which is getting better and better and better at recognizing me. It's really impressive.
The crazy thing to me, I think I mentioned this before, is when they talk about it, they don't talk about coding machines. They talk about training something almost like a pet. And it's got like a little Batman neural engine that just stops spoofers. And it's got like a Joker neural engine that tries to think of new and creative ways to spoof it. And I'm not sure they know what these engines are doing anymore. Wow. They kind of just built them and it's AI. Like, go. Yeah.
It's AI. I use it as you said, on OnePass. LastPass also works with it.
Yeah. Banking apps. And actually, it's the same API.
I want LastPass to work with Face ID, because if it doesn't do that, then I have to type in, and I have a very long LastPass password, as one would hope. So when it doesn't, I actually gave up. I just said, I won't use LastPass then. I'll wait till it works. And but you keep training it. It now works when I wake up in bed and my eyes are half shut. It works in the dark perfectly
well. Total darkness,
because it's infrared. I used it at a concert. I went to a Bruno Mars concert on Friday night. That's weird concert lighting and lasers and stuff. Flawless. It handles most environments.
You would have to beam light, like either the sun or a laser, directly into the camera to blind it for it not to work.
Sunglasses will foil it if it can't see your eyes.
If they're infrared. So sunglasses by themselves won't foil it. Like mine don't. But if you have an infrared filter on it, it'll stop the...
Okay, that's interesting. But glasses don't. Although the first time I trained it without glasses, first time I wore it, it was a little confused, but then it learned.
Some people have is they put reading glasses across their eyes and then it can't see their attention anymore.
So I just turned off attention, and I have to say, I think I'm going to leave it off because now it's just like it always knows. It's like,
I'm curious as to whether we'll see this, you know, run into the Mac line and into the iPad line where, you know, biometric becomes the only, you know, becomes something that's available on every Apple product. Because I think that once you get used to it, whether it's Apple Pay with the thumb or the facial, every time I type a code in now or give someone my credit card, I think this is a really huge security hole. you get used to this all should be biometric, and we shouldn't be having, you know, I shouldn't be giving anybody any of that information. And I think that especially as hacking continues, I think there's going to be more interest in tightening all of those things down.
Somebody in the chat room is pointing out, if you're the type of person who tapes over the camera, you can't do that anymore.
I've seen people still do it with the
on their phone.
But then if you're that kind of person, you don't want to use biometrics anyway. You want to type in your passcode.
Yeah.
Well,
passcode is not secure. Passcode is not. Biometrics are not secure. Their identity and convenience, and a long, strong password. If you're in the NSA, you want a pseudo random password to put in.
Can you do that? Can I replace my 6-digit passcode?
Yes. Yeah. With a password.
I could have a long password.
Last year, I stopped using numeric passcodes and started using alphanumerics that are really, really long. I will admit that I changed the 3-word password on my iPhone 10 with something that was 6 letters long, at least for the first weekend, because I was typing it in so much. It's like, okay, I'm willing to get hacked by people who can guess 2 3-letter words.
Let me take a little break. We're getting behind, and I don't want to get too far behind in the show. But there's lots more to talk about, including, no longer do we use the double Irish with a Dutch sandwich. We have a new way of doing it. I'm calling it the Jersey Fudge. and we'll talk about that in just a little bit. We actually have a guy in our chat room who comes from Jersey, the island of Jersey, just off the
one spelled Guernsey.
Guernsey, Jersey, and it's the Channel Islands, right? And he always, when he's visited a couple times, brings me fudge from Jersey. Apparently, they have really good cows, and the fudge is fantastic. And that's his chat handle, Jersey Fudge. So now that's what I'm calling it. Apparently, Apple has stored $280 billion in his little tiny island. We'll talk about that in a second. First, though, I want to tell you about the best thing for your new iPhone X or your iPad or, heaven forfend, your Android tablet or device. It's texture. It is Netflix for magazines. Simple as that. One flat rate. You get over 200 premium magazines. And you get them on your tablet, you get them on your phone, you get them on your Android or iOS device. Your favorite magazines, every bit of the newsstand issues, plus back issues, plus bonus features you can't put in a magazine like videos. It is awesome. Every week there's something I want to read in New Yorker. Every week. And I subscribe to the New Yorker, but now with Texture I don't have to. I've got it. Oh, every month there's something in Rolling Stone and Vanity Fair and The Atlantic that I want to read. They're all on Texture. In fact, the best magazines are all on Texture, including trade magazines that I would not subscribe to because they're very, very expensive. But I want to read Billboard and Ad Age and Ad Week. I love those things because that's my trade. They're all there. Do you like to think about living better? in beautiful houses dwell. You like to take the sex quizzes on Cosmopolitan? Who doesn't? You can without having to buy the magazine. That's embarrassing. It is fantastic. Textu.com/twit. You can try it for free. And by the way, if you continue, because you use our special offer, Textu.com/twit, you'll get it for $9.99 a month. That's a third off their listed price. It's also great for gifting this holiday season. And I'll tell you a little tip. You can use it on up to 5 devices, so you don't have to pick your iPhone or your iPad. You can have it on both. You can share it with family members, too, for that matter. Textu.com/twit. I love all the travel magazines. I love to cook. And while I don't subscribe to any cooking magazines, they're all in there, so I can quickly find great recipes with pictures and everything. Bon Appetit, Real Simple. Of course, the best political reporting ever. I talked to the founder the other day, and I said, are you noticing an uptick in people reading political stories? He said, oh, yeah. He said that's become the number one category. Tech is very big, too. They've got all the great tech magazines, including Wired. Afar and Airbnb mags, they're on there, too. So you can think about your next vacation along with Condé Nast Traveler. I love it. Textu.com. I don't even know why everybody. I don't understand. I remember, Alex, we would go to the airport. You'd buy a stack of magazines before you get on the plane. I don't even have to do that.
I just have Textu.
Yeah. Textu.com/twit. Textu.com/twit. Try it free and get a 30% off discount when you buy. Jersey fudge. So this is part of the Paradise Papers that came out this weekend. This was a kind of a follow-up to a previous massive leak of information of financial records, and primarily coming from a company called Appleby, which is a law firm in the Canary Islands, which helps big companies and high-wealth individuals use, I will point this out right up front, completely legally use tax havens to stash their money. And of course, Apple very famously started a subsidiary in Ireland where the corporate tax used to be very, very low, transferred a bunch of IP, of intellectual property assets there, took a lot of the money they made and paid the Irish subsidiary for use of that property and was able to offshore billions of dollars. Well, remember, the EU censured Ireland and asked them for hundreds of millions of dollars because it was being used.
Billions as from Apple.
Billions. Not from Apple, though, ironically, from Ireland.
Yes. So, EU told Ireland you have to charge Apple more.
Yeah, and Ireland did change its rules. But the island of Jersey apparently has a corporate tax rate of zero. And so according to the Paradise Papers, Apple, Google as well, Apple's the biggest, but many other companies, and the Queen of England and the finance advisor to Justin Trudeau and a great many high-worth individuals, including our Commerce Secretary, Wilbur Ross, have been using these, again, legal tax dodges to stash money. I think Apple has $282 billion in Jersey, but Apple denies it, right?
They put up a news post late last night, right, where they tried to explain their side of the story.
So nobody's ever said Apple's doing something illegal. And they're doing what you would expect, what shareholders anyway would expect, which is I think they're paying as little tax as they can legally.
And I think all of us do that. Like, I have an accountant.
But you can't do the double Dutch with the Irish sandwich.
That's because I don't have enough money.
You don't have enough money to do that.
But let me tell you, Lee, you know what would happen if I had enough money? I would use it.
Well,
you know, like,
so you can't blame Apple for doing this, but you can blame politicians. By the way, here's a map from Wikipedia where you see the red countries. These countries have politicians who are exposed in the Paradise Papers, who are using these tax dodges. Now you know why it's legal in so many countries. Because, and in fact, the new tax law that's being proposed at Congress right now makes these loopholes, one would hope would make them illegal, gives you more loopholes, more ways to do this.
The only argument I've seen really against this is the moral one, where it says that, you know, Apple takes a moral stance on many, many issues, including accessibility and civil rights and civil liberties, and they should have a moral obligation to pay as much tax as they possibly can.
Well, that's absurd. Like, yeah, I'm just sorry, yeah, it's just absurd.
It's absurd. You know, and even Tim Cook has said that the laws need to be reformed. Nevertheless, I mean, so Facebook does it, Uber does it, Nike does it, Walmart does it, Allianz does it, Siemens does it, McDonald's does it, Yahoo does it, Allergan, the makers of Botox, do it. You know, billions of dollars. And now what's happened, though, is that puts a tax burden on you and me. We're not rich enough to do this. So we pay more tax. I pay more. More taxes than Apple does by far.
No, you don't.
And it's still worth
not dollar-wise percentage.
But, I mean, you know, they are 7% of Ireland's economy.
That's,
I mean,
why,
you know, like
that's Apple's justification. They'd say, well, we pay more taxes than anybody in the world.
An average of 21%.
But they make more money than anybody in the world.
Well, no, and I also think America is unique in that they want you to pay taxes for money you are somewhere in outside America, whether you're an individual or a company. And, not all countries do that.
I understand that. Yet Apple is transferring intellectual property assets out of the United States to Ireland and now to Jersey to reduce their tax liability. I agree. Well, what are you going to say to Amazon, Apple? You've got to pay more even though you don't have to?
And Amazon's looking at moving into a new city. This happens in the United States too, by the way. It's not, you know, like cities give states provide companies with tax breaks. I mean, you want to talk about the film industry. You know, you get a 25% tax break to film in Louisiana or in New Mexico, or, you know, and that's money that it's like a tax credit that comes back to you. I mean, it's an incredible. I mean, so the competition over taxes is basically how countries and states and cities market themselves to corporations.
Well, to that point, Ireland, in 1 year, its gross domestic product went up 26% when Apple transferred everything over there. Right. So, yes. But now Jersey gets nothing because they're not charging any tax. Jersey just gets some bankers rich, I guess.
They get their name in the press, Leo.
Yeah, so no one knew about them before that. Now everybody knows about it.
Yeah, Apple's being sued for $14.5 billion in tax taxes. But I have to say, by the way, Bono also does this. The president of Liberia does it.
Essentially, that everybody who wants to have some control over how they spend their money, whether it's Bono wanting to give more money away,
right.
They don't want to give it to the government. They don't want to. I mean, they don't want to. They want to give it to what they think is important.
Queen of England does it,
and not have it, you know, be squandered by
Jean Chrétien.
Whatever they disagree
your
with.
Former prime minister did it. Does it?
So Schwinnigan Strangler.
What we need to do, frankly, is we need to call Congress and say, you know, you got to eliminate these loopholes.
No, it's not going to happen.
It's hard because
I think we need to get realistic.
You know why it's not going to happen? Because these people pay Congress a lot of money to make sure that they don't pay as much tax.
And it's not just the Congress; it's the parliaments in other countries. They benefit from this fight, like materially. So it's very hard to get them to move off.
Dozen members of the Trump cabinet are in the documents.
Yeah.
Robert Mercer and Sheldon Adelson are in the doc. Basically, any high-value individual is a fool if they're paying taxes at this point.
You pay people just to make that go away, and most of them, probably half of them, don't even know it's happening. Like, they just, you know, they have an accounting firm that, you know, they have $100 million, and they hand it off to a manager, and the manager makes sure that they pay the minimum amount of taxes they
Madonna
can do.
Madonna does it. Paul Allen does it. Wesley Clark does it.
It's pretty much
I'm feeling like an idiot for paying all these taxes. I pay almost half my income in taxes.
So do I.
I feel like an idiot.
But again, if I somehow sold my company for $100 million, I would hand it off to a managing firm, and they would do exactly the same thing. And I wouldn't know about it or think about it, or it wouldn't bother me. You know, it would just go, you know, I would hand it to them, and then they give me a proper return. And that's how that stuff happens.
I mean, according to the Boston Consulting Group, the amount of money involved here is about $10 trillion. Apple's just a, you know, fraction of that.
A drop in the billion bucket.
Yeah. But I do feel like, I don't know. I don't know what to say. It's offensive. But it's not Apple's fault. I understand that.
There's so many. I guess that there's so many places that happens that it's like that one's an easy one to see. But you look at like, okay, high frequency trading. That is the leech that sits on top of Wall Street. Just sucks money out for no value at all. I mean, you know, and we know, you know, people just don't understand it well enough to argue about it. So we can see this one, but I don't think that it's, you know, it's a small number compared to what
I'm really much more offended by what a lot of large corporations in the tech industry, the games they play with labor to make sure that they will never convert an hourly temporary worker into a permanent worker who gets benefits. I love Amazon. I love them for a great many reasons. I think they're doing a lot of really great work in tech, but I hate the fact that they seem to stack the deck so that, yeah, we'll make sure that someone gets fired before they get to the next level of employment, where, again, they're going to have to start paying them for actually listing them as real employees, where they're obligated to get them insurance. They're really obligated to give them some protection on the job. It's not just Amazon. There are a lot of companies that are like this.
It's not just corporations. Government agencies do the same thing where they put people on unemployment and take them. You know, they put them on and take them off just to keep their budget controlled. And you know, it is everybody's trying. Everybody finds an angle. You know, my mother decided to work for Head Start for a little while because she was really excited about it. And then when she watched what they were doing with the employment, she started asking questions, and then she was fired. Yeah. You know, it's like she was like, I don't think this is right. And then they were like,
it's okay for Apple to say that, yeah, we have a business in the Gainery Islands. It's a food service company that Apple runs that makes $128 billion a year. That's why we need to keep moving that money around there. What I don't like is making sure that, hey, you know what? All these employees we've had in this company that we bought last year, 300 employees. If we fire them all, then rehire them all as consultants. It's like, no, right. Don't fire them all and rehire them as consultants. You're not hiding money here. These are real lives. So that's what I wish that were headline news every single week, as opposed to this company's hiding tax money someplace.
Yeah, I agree with that.
To add insult to injury, Jersey Fudge says he can't even buy an iPhone 10 in Jersey.
What? Did the one they had sell out?
They're still
no. You can't buy one in Jersey. There's no Apple store. So he had to. He said he had to mess with his postal codes to pretend he was in the UK.
But wasn't that one of the 55 launch countries? And I thought we joked that they would have like one iPhone.
Yeah,
at a convenience store or something.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, the community is benefiting. It's just like the sod houses of Oklahoma. When they're settling, they would build houses out of sod because that was the most available material. They're building houses out of bricks of $100 bills furnished by Americans. Schools, new hospitals,
community centers. Excellent insulation value when you build your buildings out of money. The insulation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, good it's for thick. Heating it's and thick. Cooling.
The key is to crumple it up into little balls because it creates more of an air gap.
The coins are the paper.
That's what I find.
The coins are not
good. And I think that $100 bills actually insulate better than a dollar.
Yeah, well, the best is those bundles, $10,000 bundles.
It's the cryptocurrency. They have the best insulator.
Thank you, Jersey Fudge. I said Canary Islands, which is a very nice place.
I've never been to
Cayman Islands, not the Cayman Islands. Cayman.
You've got to holiday in the Canary Islands, Alex.
Yeah. Canaries are nice.
It's Canary, isn't it?
It's pronounced canary?
Yeah.
In Singapore, you get canaried.
Because
said canary.
I remember because it was also it's also noticeable for being the site of the worst passenger air disaster in
Tenerife.
History.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time as a little kid, news readers or whatever correcting themselves and saying Canary Islands until canary. It's named after the bird, not after the dogs.
Oh, well, I'll be there in next year, so I'll be sure to ask a local.
I should get credit not for correcting you, but for correcting you and not starting it with actually,
Leo. So
I'll take
if you were just to pay attention. You're right. I'm looking at the article in Wikipedia. Canary.
I'm not a nitpicker. I'm a pedant.
Kind of canary.
There's a difference which I will explain
here.
To you.
It's an archipelago, an autonomous community of Spain located in the Atlantic Ocean, 100 miles west
Isn't
of Morocco.
Isn't it an archipelago, Leo?
Oh, shut up. I'll check my schedule and get back to you.
Schedule. Often. Will you get back to me often?
Often. So what can we deduce about the future of iPhone from the 10? Is this now the – it feels to me like they don't want to go back.
The next design language,
This is the way it is, right?
Yeah, definitely. They don't have a habit of having – of doing a fork of hardware features, especially something as important as how do you unlock the phone. So I think it's clear that they're going to want to put Face ID on everything. I think it's clear they're going to want to put OLED on everything. I don't know how they're going to do both of them and still have items like the iPhone SE, but they also, again, they don't want to have one laptop that has one technology, another laptop that doesn't have it. They like to have a little bit of consistency.
Congratulations, Apple. The Supreme Court has refused to hear the slide to unlock patent case, so it's over. It's over. Apple now owns slide to unlock, and Samsung's going to have
to pay some money. Just when they brought it back.
Yeah,
it just brought it back.
That's right. It is. It's on this. That's right. Somebody tweeted, "Oh yeah, great. Now Apple owns it, but they don't use it. But they do now on the iPhone 10." So there.
But seriously, every time there's like a new chapter in this lawsuit and all lawsuits like it, it's like when you read about how a homeowner and the homeowner association are suing over the definition of, is a mailbox considered a structure? And dude, did that person need to have a permit to put up a Tigger shaped mailbox? Yeah. It's like, you're idiots. Both of you are idiots for arguing about this for more than it takes to cook one hamburger at a community cookout. Go away.
I do
solve
have to
feed a hungry person, please.
I do have to say Apple had a very good quarter there. Quarterly results came out between last show and this. And iPhone net sales, 55% of the overall revenue, which actually would have been bigger except for, look at the size of the services chunk. That's the mustard. iPhone is red on this.
Mustard.
The mustard color is 16% services. Huge growth and a very large chunk of revenue, followed by, and I'm happy to say, Mac sales, iPad sales, and other, which I guess is what, the watch? I don't know what other.
And they keep the watch in other.
But Apple's.
hear that, naysayers? The Mac is kicking others' ass.
It is. All the others. Mac sales up, iPad sales up. They'd been going down for a while. This was a spectacular quarter as we expected, but there are some things to be learned. For instance, the iPhone 8 seems to have sold quite well.
Wow, different than those reports indicated. Yeah, Who would have believed that?
Yeah, well, they didn't break out the iPhone 8 specifically, but they said they sold 46.7 million iPhones.
And it looked like the plus mix was high again.
Ah, interesting. They mentioned that in the analyst call. You listen, I'm sure, to the analyst call. You and Serenity. I know Serenity is typing as fast as
she was honeymooning this year, so Micah Sargent did the typing.
How dare she?
Well, no, her honeymoon is going to the World Roller Derby Championships and competing for like competing 3 days straight. Right. So.
a combination competing in a World Cup event and shooting same event as part of an iPhone 10. Yeah.
Yes.
God damn these people who are younger than me and more and have more energy and more ambition.
So,
damn it.
So they had a great Q3.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Q4. This is their calendar fourth quarter, or fiscal fourth quarter, I should say. It's the calendar third quarter. This means, with the iPhone 10 coming out, obviously demand very high for it. They're going to have two record quarters in a row.
And the holidays. Right. I mean,
holy cow.
Don't forget that they have the HomePod coming out, which is priced for people who are not, who it's priced low enough that people will buy it even if they're not sure about it, and it's something that everybody can want and try out. So that could be pretty exciting. If they manage to ship it before December 24th, let's say.
Yeah.
Well, and if Alex buys all the iMac Pros that we expect he will, it could be a blowout quarter.
I don't know.
And Apple, which normally gives fairly conservative guidance, said their Q1 2018 is going to be the best single quarter ever by a wide margin.
Yeah.
Wow. So stand back and get ready, Jersey. Well, you can see there's some packets of money coming.
Well, what's interesting is that if you go back and you look at what Tim Cook said, what, a year and a half ago, he said, we're very excited about what's coming up. Oh, you know, it was one of those things like, you know, and we were all like, what does he mean? What is he talking about? Well, it turns out
at what point does the spreadsheet tell them that, look, Apple, it's costing us a lot more money to store the money that we're making than the money itself. It's like the cost of manufacturing a penny is like 7 cents. It's like, please, let's. It's important we not make more money.
Tim Cook and Luca Maestri, the CFO, taking the analyst call, said the iPhone 8 instantly became our two most popular iPhone models and have been every 6 weeks since then. Of course, they took the call before the 10 came out.
Right.
Because now I guarantee you the 10 is the most popular.
On supply.
They don't break it down, but if you look at iPhone revenue, this is a four-quarter moving average. It's solid. It's solid and strong. It's not as big as when the iPhone 6. That was the big jump, right?
Right.
Because
I love it when Jason Snell gets his graph on.
He is really just so doing good. This is from sixcolors.com. Those are billions of dollars, kids.
Yeah, iPhone 6 famously sucked upgrades forward. People who were planning to upgrade later saw the bigger phone and they decided, screw it, I'm going to go now. And yeah. I think iPhone 10, because the supply is so constrained, but I think people are still looking at iPhone 10 and going, I was going to upgrade next year, but look at that edge-to-edge display or look at those Animoji or whatever it is. And it makes them upgrade earlier than they would have otherwise.
Now, let's put this in perspective. 46.7 million iPhones sold in this just-ended quarter. That's a lot. The top quarter they've ever had was the last holiday quarter in 2017, and that was 78 million phones. And Apple's guidance is this is going to be the best ever.
It's like 81 or 82, I think. 81 or 82 billion dollars.
To put it in, I mean, Neil Seibert and Ben Beharin had a great conversation on launch day where they said Apple just sold more iPhone 10s than Google is likely to sell Pixel phones the entire year.
Oh,
in one day. So it's the scale they operate at. Even when they're constrained, the amount of units they're pushing
is
ridiculous.
This is unit sales, Alex. So remember that this is a more expensive phone. So revenue and profits will be even higher.
Although we don't know, because Apple has sometimes taken a hit on margin with like things on the iPad Pro when they first bring them to market, because they know they'll make it up in generation two or on later production units. And the panel in this thing is super expensive, and the two-depth camera in this is super expensive. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see where the margin actually works out.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all for Apple to say, well, they're not going to lose money on the iPhone 10, but they're not going to make as much.
No, but they might make like 29 instead of 33 or something.
Percent, yeah. But I could see them doing that because the price is high as it is. They would like to keep that price at least within the ballpark.
I think we need to lay bets on when we think Apple crosses, just even for an hour, crosses a valuation of $1 trillion.
Yeah.
Oh, this,
because they're at 900 billion.
That quarter will do it.
Do you think that there might ever come a day where they're so valuable that either for regulatory purposes, for shareholder purposes, for tax purposes, they really have to do an alphabet sort of thing where they have to create a new independent company just for iTunes, or a new independent company just for mobile? It seems as it kind of staggers the mind to think of one company that has that much valuation to it, that is still here are the half dozen white people on this one page that run the entire thing.
I don't know. They won't say this, I think, but I think one of the best things that ever happened to them was Android, because they'd have all kinds of regulatory problems.
Yeah,
Android didn't exist.
Yeah,
you know, and so the fact that even though they're making a lot of money with the iPhone, the fact that it is the minority of the market leaves them to be able to do pretty much whatever they want. You know, and I think that's an interesting
process. Only that, but they benefit from competition in the traditional way. They also benefit from competition because imagine a world in which macOS was the dominant operating system. Let's say it had Microsoft Windows market share worldwide. They could not have a business model that involves the lowest priced laptop is $1,000, and it doesn't have the features that everybody wants and needs. They would have to find a way to make a $500 laptop that has more conventional, boring features about it. They couldn't really afford to do three models, and all of them have this high grade of components and stuff like that. So it really does give them the two brothers. One brother never moved out of his hometown, made sure the mom and dad were taken care of, you know, ran for mayor in the community, the George Bailey of Bedford Falls, that's Microsoft, and and Apple got to be the brother, the younger brother who got to go to World War II and become a Congressional Medal of Honor winner and have those adventures. I would say it's a sad thing for Microsoft, but it does help to illustrate that we need lots of companies pursuing that gets excited by completely different things in order to have a complete palette of technology out there.
I should point out, according to an analysis, and I don't, these bill of materials analysis are always a little, Apple contests them, but Tech Insights does it every phone. And they say, according to Tech Insights, the iPhone 10 costs Apple 25% more to make than the iPhone 8, but because it costs 43% more, they actually make more money on the iPhone 10.
I think that the problem,
they say the cost is $357.50.
The problem with that calculation is always that it calculates on the parts that are there, not the return rate. You know, I think that there was.
Yeah.
I remember talking to someone about the.
There's other costs than,
you know,
just
like
building
the trackpad.
The phone
on, when the trackpad first came out that didn't have the button, I heard that the return rate was like 60%.
Right,
so while that has a certain value to it, but they were throwing away 60% of them because they weren't getting through.
Right. OLED is a particular problem. The number of, especially again, a brand new manufacturing, the number of panels they have to throw away because of dead pixels or because it didn't come out right. It's not as though they've got it knocked down so that it always works, always works, always works. It doesn't get into how much it costs to manufacture. How much it costs to assemble these things. And so you take that with a grain of salt. I tend to read them kind of like the way that Douglas Adams in the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy described the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy itself. It said, even when it's wrong, at least it's considered to be canonically and officially wrong. So even if these numbers are wrong, they're always wrong in the same way every single time. So they're at least a good jumping off point for conversation. But
$65.50 for the OLED display. But remember, Samsung makes it, so that number would include the reject. Right, right. Well, I mean, this is what Samsung charges them.
We've seen much higher rates too, like $120. But the couple important things here. One is my favorite West Wing reference, where it says, "Yeah, the second one costs $3. The first one costs $2 billion to get to there." But also, a lot of times the components, we've seen mistakes with components, like when they just assumed that there was an FM radio on the iPhone because the Broadcom number looked the same, and Apple actually sources custom parts for all of these, and the cost and value of a custom part is much different than just buying off the shelf retail parts. My understanding is that these estimates, they are consistent unto themselves, but they have no bearing on reality.
Well, they have to be considered for what they are. I mean, it's not explosive. The researchers are doing hard work. They're doing important work. I've spoken to a couple of people whose job it is to do stuff like that, and they don't just simply Google go on eBay.com, say how much does it cost to buy a panel or anything like that. It is an incredible amount of work. The same amount of work that a lot of people put into predicting who's going to win the Oscars or who's going to which picture is going to be at the top of the crown at the end of a season. There's a lot of math, a lot of research, a lot of work. There's a lot of scholarship that goes into it. But at the end of the day, it's just their guess as to what's going to happen.
That's a good way to put it.
So stainless steel chassis, $36. I mean, the point is these are the same people who generated the numbers for the 8. So, yes, okay. But as you point out, Renee, if you're comparing apples to apples, it's, they're doing the same methodology for both phones. It's still more expensive, but better margin, right?
The margin I would be less careful about because, again, we don't know. Might be an average over time what that margin becomes, but certainly up front, I don't think they're making those
margins. I think it could be that margin, September of next year or July of next year, but I think that is probably less than this first batch.
Yeah, and these things always get less expensive to manufacture as time goes by, because the reject rate of manufacture becomes less. They also figure out where the bottlenecks are. So by the time they're charging $500 for, oh my God, you have an iPhone X, not an iPhone XVI. Oh my God,
what will they call the next one?
Who are you?
XI? No,
they can call it anything. They call it
XS.
iPhone bandana.
I think the iPhone XS is pretty good.
Well, they were joking the small one would be the iPhone SEX.
I wouldn't be so sure that there isn't an iPhone X edition somewhere. Ooh. On the idea.
I hope to God there isn't, because that'll just cost me a lot of money.
when we actually see the numbers, because what they're proving with the 10, of course, is that there is definitely a part of their market that is not cost sensitive at all. I think there's a possibility that you see this one become less expensive. Another one comes out that is, let's say, $1,200. Now that they've broken the 1,000.
They clearly did the – and this is why the margin thing is important. They clearly did the math. Well, how much more can we charge?
Right.
And they said $200. Nobody – that's going to be – if you charge $500 more but we could probably push it as far as $200.
But again, it's how much are they paying for many people? It's how much are they paying per month? And I think that's going to be an interesting.
That's just a few bucks.
Or Leo, remember your iPhone? Your Apple Watch Edition unboxing. I could imagine where Apple takes a small batch and does iPhone Edition, and you get the inductive charger in the box with it, and you get all the sort of pomp and circumstance you get with the Apple Watch.
Replace the stainless steel with ceramic.
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of things that they could test. And that's what you do. When your product reaches maturity, you only start increasing by you no longer add carriers or add territories to increase the number of people. You start adding stranger verticals like sizes or materials.
But, you know, I like this phone so much that at this point I would consider joining the upgrade program. I didn't in the past because I wasn't sure. I'd always – But this one, I definitely want the next one and the one after and the one after.
Go ahead,
Andy. I'm sorry.
Just pointing out that remember that October, November, the first month of sales of a new iPhone particularly, remember that those are kind of freak sales in that those are the people that are – they don't want to wait even a week to get the new phone. They are on tenterhooks. Those are the people that
– You're calling me a
$200.
Freak.
No.
Excuse I waited me, 5 minutes.
A phone that I paid for because I don't know if I'm going to get a review unit and I can't stand to not at least be testing it out the first week long outside everybody else. Let me tell you, watching Renee's Instagram stuff, I felt like the little kid who was had to stay inside doing his violin lessons while other kids are playing stickball outside. It's like, oh, I'd like to play with Animojis too. That's an important piece of data. The other important piece of data happens in the coming months when you have the person who dropped their phone off the side of a rented kayak and the people who have finally had it with a 3-year-old phone and they're going out to buy a new one. When they make the choice between the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 10, that's going to be really interesting data. But I really like the direction that Apple is taking. I know I've said this before, but it's still very much on my mind that they really do want to be a design company that makes technology as opposed to a technology company. That's the sort of thing you would say to sort of diminish Apple 5 years ago. But now I think it's really one of their most intriguing aspects. They really want to make a beautiful object, something that you just love to pick up every morning and put down as one of the last things you see every single night. And so that's why as much as I still find it difficult to say $1,000 minimum iPhone without saying also really good Android phones that cost $400 or $500. I'm at the same time, I'm intrigued by what Apple would do if they said, what if we were to not increase the price of the iPhone 10, but let's do an iPhone 10 edition. Let's say we cost $1,500 and we put no new technology in this, but we really make this the most finely, we'll make it like a Leica, the way that every single piece is fitted together. We can do a ceramic enclosure. We can do a manufacturing technique that results in a shockingly beautiful object, but it fails every 37 out of 150 times we try to assemble one. That would really get my attention very quickly.
And you know,
I'd still be complaining.
As the owner of a couple of Leica objects, I know exactly what you're talking about.
There are very expensive Android phones. We just don't see them very often.
The Essential phone, which is titanium and ceramic, and really is quite a beautiful object. It's only $500. I mean, there are beautiful phones out there, but they're, you know, I just, this works on so many different ways.
Tiffany, Cartier, all the Shreve Crump and Lowe. All these, you like to see there's a house style for $1,000 phone, but there's another house style for another $1,000 phone. Just like there are Ferrari people, there are Lamborghini people, there are McLaren people. Yeah. These are each $1.5 million cars, and they're each amazingly beautiful objects. But there are some people that they wouldn't spend $500,000 on a Lamborghini, but they'll spend $2 million on a McLaren or a Koenigsegg. I would hate it if this were the direction of the entire industry, but I'm intrigued by the idea of there being a component of the industry for people who, again, they have this relationship with their phone or they have enough money that they just want the most beautiful object. We are getting to, as much as we've been talking about the nice features of the iPhone 10, it's hard for me to get around the observation that every phone that costs more than $300 is about 90% feature-wise, ease-of-use-wise, construction-wise with each other. Yeah. And the rest of it is a lot of how much is that extra 5% or 10% worth to you. So this is a great way. Apple is uniquely poised to figure out a way to still make a relevant $800, $900, $1,000 phone.
Well, and I think that the other thing is the features that we're seeing today for $1,400 when everything, the dust settles with your Apple Care and everything else, that's going to be in the $900 phone next year and in the $600 phone the year after that or whatever. You know, and the fact that there's millions or tens of millions of people who want to buy something that's really expensive will help accelerate the speed at which we move down that path. You know, I mean, and really the phone, I spend far more time on my phone than I spend on my computer at this point. I mean, it is the next computer. You know, I don't think there's a lot of people that disagree with that.
I just want to see Andy do Animoji Hamilton right now.
Oh. See, despite I don't want to pile on. I'm just saying that there was a time where the Gundam style video, everyone was talking about it. It was like this big thing, and I searched, I wonder what that is. And I went to this is an insight into my personality, for good or bad. Then I went on YouTube, I wonder what that's about. Then I saw that it had 50 million views to it, and I thought, no, I'm not going to be smug about this, but I would like to be the one person who has never seen the Gundam style video, barely has any idea what people are talking about. If someone starts like doing a giddy up thing, I don't know if that's part of it, if that is
it. Like 4 billion views now?
Yeah. And so I'm tempted. I have thought about, oh, wouldn't it be fun to do an Animoji video? I'm like, actually, wouldn't it be kind of fun to not be the only person who's never done that and to look that unhip?
I was a little confused when you said Gundam style video, because that, of course, is not the same thing as Gangnam style video.
Oh, sorry.
So, my mind was really working on that one, because Gundam is better
than Gangnam. You know,
actually, a Gundam style video.
That's how much I don't know about the Gangnam style.
Well, you know, I realized,
like,
you know,
Macross.
My kids actually know all the words to Hamilton. They could probably and that sounds like a kid project.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Hamilton.
Just, I got to get some Mac stuff in there, because people always say, "Where's your Mac news?" Good news. It was the best fiscal year for the Macintosh product line ever.
iMac.
By revenue. No, all Macs, $25.8 billion, powered not by the iMac, but mostly by the MacBook Pro.
Interesting.
Which everybody, well, I hated.
I hate.
A lot of people hated.
I still have.
But people bought in droves. 25% increase year over year in Mac revenue.
I'm probably going to succumb. Yeah.
And that's really unit sales, not over, prices went up a little bit, but I think that's mostly unit sales.
Mm. I'm waiting for one more upgrade to move.
Like Andy says, there's no alternative for people. They have to, if they want a MacBook Pro, they have to buy that one. But I would be really interested to see what Apple could do if they made an iMac Pro version of the MacBook Pro, where they said, okay, we've heard you. Here's your Mac Pro with everything else, and then let them compete in the wild.
I'm not predicting anything, but I'm pretty ready to see a dramatically redesigned MacBook Pro next year, at least with a new keyboard. There's such... now that they've been in the field for a number of months, there's a lot of blog posts. A lot of users have been saying that now that there's some crud underneath some of the keys, and now some of my favorite letters of the alphabet no longer work, or they're unreliable. It might be more trouble. I don't know what the advantage of, from a manufacturing point of view, for Apple. I would have to say that, though, I believe that on a list of things that Apple would change about an upcoming MacBook, and this is not just personal preference, I think the keyboard is kind of on that list right now. But I'm curious. It's hard to say when you have the Mac platform where people literally have to wait years for a new model that looks materially different, like a material upgrade from what you've got right now. It's hard to gauge how much is genuine anticipation of response to the product itself, and how much of it is, I have been waiting for 4 years now for a brand new MacBook. I've been holding on to my PowerPC version of the Mac or whatever. It's interesting. I hope that someone forwards that report, that those numbers to Apple, because if they see those numbers, they might actually show some real interest in the Mac in the future.
It's just in. Donald Trump just got 280 characters on his Twitter account. Stand back.
Didn't we all? I think it just went live for everybody.
Did we all get it?
I think it just went live for everybody.
Oh. Really? Let me see. Let me tweet. Let's tweet.
That's fine, because we're tweeting.
My 140 character tweets are still going to be that much more valuable to people.
Yeah. Damn it.
I saw Business Insider saying it just went live for everybody.
Someone got like 35,000 characters.
Huh?
Some guys they got suspended for it. I think some German researchers.
Oh, they found a hack. Yeah.
Well, they just put one long giant URL in there, and it turned out it was an actual active URL, and so they were that URL was 35,000.
Yeah, but the shortener made it t.co blah blah blah.
No, but when you did something, it broke a whole bunch of things.
It's the first successful like implementation of Doom. Like inside a URL, like just lots of JavaScript.
Check,
playable Doom game inside.
Check your Twitters, guys. Do any of you?
Let me see. I'm hoping that maybe we should create a new statistic called the Twitter ERA, so that it's not just how long the tweets are. It's like how valuable is each character?
Price per letter earnings.
Congratulations, Leo! You've there you go.
I still have 140.
I was just going to say that it was taking a long time for Twitter to load. Like, it must be because you've been hyping up.
I broke Twitter. You think? No. Anyway, let's see. Nope, Apple services. The last thing we'll cover from this quarterly report. Huge growth in services. $8.5 billion in revenue, up from 7.3 last quarter, 7 the quarter before. I mean, this is massive growth. Year over year, this is, about 30%, maybe a little bit more growth. So, what is that? What is Apple services? And why is it growing so fast?
Apple Music, Apple Pay, App Store. I mean, App Store revenue still continues to grow. Apple Music subscriptions still continue to grow.
You think it's Apple Music? It can't be that much.
App Store is probably a huge percentage of that.
And Apple Pay is doing quite well. Although I just saw a story that said Walmart's doing even better with its Walmart.
I spent my morning on that story. So this is a story. There's a survey that says that Walmart Pay is going to crush Apple because it is used more. Because it is used more in stores that have it than Apple is, where Walmart does not allow Apple Pay.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. And the graphs of all different scales. They're like Apple Insider did a really good job breaking down the numbers
it's focused,
too.
But
it
was, in other words, don't.
It felt like Walmart PR being pushed through Bloomberg.
Yeah. Thank you, Bloomberg. Might want to read those PR press releases a little bit better. Take a break. Coming back with more. Our show today brought to you by the massively phenomenal Ring Video doorbell. I love my Ring. It's a doorbell. Replaced my regular doorbell. I have a wired doorbell. You can do it with an unwired door or anywhere, really, if you want. You can put it on your bedroom door if you wanted. But on my outside door wired doorbell, I know that my Xbox just came because I saw the video on my Ring Video doorbell.
All right.
It's there, though, not here. it's a doorbell that pairs to joins your Wi-Fi, has a high-def camera on it, has a microphone, a speaker on it, and motion sensing on it. So when anybody walks up your path, you see it. You get a ping if you want. You get a ping on your phone, no matter where you are anywhere in the world. When somebody rings your doorbell, your phone can go ding-dong, and you can answer it because it's got a speaker. They can talk to you because it's got a microphone. You never miss another package. You can watch those packages, make sure they're safe. And now there's the Ring floodlight cam.
I love this.
LED. First of all, you've probably seen the floodlights around your house. They're motion sensitive, right? They turn on. A lot of people have those. These are LED lights. But imagine if you took that. In fact, you can replace it directly with this. This is from Ring, their Ring floodlight cam. And added a camera, a microphone, a speaker, and an alarm, plus a big light on it. Now we're talking the ultimate in home security. The floodlights are high visibility. Convenient for you when you walk down, to get the garbage cans to put outside or whatever. But the HD camera means you can get pinged when somebody walks behind your house or in your yard or in your garage, wherever you put these. And suddenly, you'll not only see them, you can talk to them, scare them away. And if they don't move, you can press a button on your phone that sets off a 110 decibel alarm, and they'll run then. Hey, buddy, what are you doing here? Get out of my... And the red light goes off. It is awesome. This is part of their Ring of Security kits. If you go to ring.com/MacBreak, You can get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit, including a Ring video doorbell. Choose the original or the pro, plus one, two, or three Ring video floodlight cams. This is the way to make your house totally secure, safe. You'd know what's going on no matter where you are anywhere in the world. Wall Street Journal's Best of CES 2017, the Ring Floodlight Cam, ring.com/MacBreak. And we thank them for their support and for keeping my house safe. I love you, Ring. I love you, man. Let's see. More news in the Apple world. iCloud and Apple Music generate more revenue than iPad and Apple Watch combined. That's that service's story. Is that true?
I don't know.
It's wild.
Do they break down services by component?
They don't. Do they? Well, they break down iPad and Mac sales.
But I mean, they will sometimes tell you App Store numbers separately.
Other would be watch. Yeah. So basically, I don't know if you added other and iPads.
Apps. I like that. I would like them to make the App Store into a separate item, because oh boy, does it make a lot of money.
Yeah, 30% of everything.
Yeah,
that's all my Pokeballs money.
Yeah, that's right. They get 30% of every one of Renee's Pokeballs. Yeah,
and all your Simpsons stuff, Leo.
And all my Simpsons donuts. I spent $300 in Simpsons donuts. They got $100.
And people are saying Animal Crossing is going to be a super windfall for everybody involved.
That's a big game on Nintendo, right? Animal Crossing and Xbox. So it's coming to the iPhone?
And apparently their microtransactions are highly addictive. So we'll see how that.
Oh, boy.
I wonder if Jason can do his next bar graph on how much revenue does Apple get from Renee's watch band purchases versus his Pokemon in game purchases.
Oh, God.
I bet that's an interesting
chart. I don't want to know, Andy. Ignorance is bliss.
We had Brian X. Chen from the New York Times, their tech guy, on the Twitch show on Sunday. Actually, for Sunday, we call him Brian Ten Chen. Just, but he said this was happening to him, and it did not happen to me. If you type the letter I on some iOS 11 devices, it replaces it with an A and a
happening to me
square with a question mark. You're getting it? Yeah, Megan said she
got it. It was originally an A, but now it's an exclamation mark and a question mark inside the box. Like it's mutating, Leo.
What is going on? Apple's fix for it, right? They say they'll fix it in a patch sometime soon, but the fix right now is to set up autocorrect to replace it.
So what it looks like it's doing is that for some reason the autocorrect dictionary got poisoned, and instead of autocorrecting a lowercase I to an uppercase I, it's correcting it to an uppercase I with what I believe is a non-break space for emoji conjoining, which can't properly be rendered. So then it ends up spitting out this character, which is like an exclamation mark, square box with either an A or a question mark
in
it.
That makes sense.
And they've got to push. You can overwrite it because you can set your own text replacement and force lowercase I to be uppercase I with no garbage next to it. But otherwise, they're going to push out a replacement that fixes. There's no truth to the rumor that this is a machine learning system gone wry, and this is the first step towards Skynet. No truth to that.
Well, it came up a lot because there was a Twitter meme where you would type "I was born" and then let autocorrect fill in your biography, or "I died" and let it. And a lot of people went "A question mark was born." And you saw that, and I went, "What?"
And so, my favorite was Jeremy Burgess, the Emojipedia guy. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, where he redid the iPhone 10 graphic with the A square bracket phone 10, our biggest achievement yet. That was outstanding.
Speaking of Apple Pay, Apple Pay Cash launches for some of you today. I don't know, did anybody get it here in beta? This lets you send and receive cash from messages. Wow.
It's you have to be part of the public beta. Some developers are saying they see it as well, but Apple's officially saying the public beta, and you have to be on the latest version of
11.2 beta 2.
Yeah.
And then, so you can opt into that.
In the U.S. only.
Yeah. Oh, U.S. only, so you wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
Okay. So you could opt into that, and then you might be offered. But then you have to find somebody you want to send money to, and then you have to have money to send.
Well, it'll pull from your account, whatever account is in there, to start sending money. When you receive money, it'll start filling up the Apple Cash card.
Oh, so the source of funding, any debit or credit card you have in your Apple Pay, and there are no fees charged, at least for now, if it's a debit card, and an industry standard fee for credit cards. which probably is the few percent the credit card company charges Apple for that. The first time someone sends you money, you will opt in to accept it and be issued a new virtual Apple Pay cash card. Oh, so this card, yeah, I don't want that. This card can only be used to send money or pay for things via Apple Pay. So it's not like...
It's like a buffer. It's like a buffer for the system so you can send and receive money in and out.
Can you cash out?
Yeah, it'll go to your bank account. Okay. I believe it works fundamentally the way other pay systems do. And Matthew Panzerino tweeted that it also has an optical effect on the card based on the accelerometer, so it moves around like a holographic.
I kind of like that.
Design details.
I kind of like that. Apple's working with Green Dot to do the back end on this.
Yeah.
I find the cash card interesting.
Well, it's an important thing that makes things work. The moving money from one bank to another is really complicated and can be really expensive. That's super smart of Apple to do this, basically giving you an Apple bank account where maybe you would prefer to let all these $3 for a cup of coffee, splitting the check, $13 here, kind of accumulate, and only when you notice that you've got $100 in there, make the transfer. So now you've taken two dozen little transactions and turn them into one big transaction, which makes it really, really simple. And in all the cases where I paid, I meet with friends for breakfast every week or every couple of weeks. So sometimes I'm paying in, sometimes I'm paying, sometimes. So if sometimes it's like the same $11 that just moves between four friends every week. So that $11 maybe will never actually leave this Apple buffer, which makes it simple. Apple controls that entire part of the transaction. You never have to contact a bank and negotiate with them for things to work. So it's not as though Apple is trying to create a brand new kind of currency and create their own banking system. It's just a convenience feature, I think, that just makes things work simpler.
It's not like that, but it could be like that.
Yeah,
you're talking about stepping. It's a very slow step.
You always said Apple was going to become a bank.
Apple's the only company in the world that is positioned to be able to do that
because they
could literally their banking and loan could be only to pay for people who are borrowing money to buy their products. You know, and you'd have to have like $200 billion to get it off the ground. And I don't know. There's not a lot.
And there
of
were some people
that.
Who were saying they were already trying to use it to go around points of turn. Like they were going to stores and Apple pay me the cash to get around point of sale system. So that'll be interesting to see medium businesses.
I'm kind of fascinated with a zero cost transaction in Apple Pay means theoretically you could give it to somebody in another country like Western Union. Like, I mean, you know, like you could just say, I want to give my, you know, let's say I'm from Zimbabwe and I live in London and I want to send money back. I could be using Apple Pay theoretically if there was someone on the other side that would take Apple Pay. But, it's just an interesting from a remittance perspective. From you know, people start paying each other in Apple Pay. It's just an interesting. It could very slowly turn into a really big part of what Apple does.
That's a big part of how money works these days. I get paid for a podcast or two in PayPal, and because the last thing I ever want to do is hook up PayPal to any of my bank accounts, it just sort of stays there for little transactions that are sort of personal one to one. And yes, I do buy things from B&H Photo, stuff like that, but oftentimes it's that, I would love to take that off your hands if you're going to just throw away this old computer. I'll PayPal you whatever costs for shipping and the amount of money for a beer or whatever. It really is that we don't need to go through a big bank to do the transactions. It's okay to simply say, I've got a pot full of money that can be easily represented as electrons and easily cut and paste from one place to another. So yeah, it would be intriguing if Apple decided to make this a little bit more abstract in a year or two. And try to make it as a really easy way to move money from one person to another, whether it's the kid who's shoveling your snow during December, whether it's someone on Etsy, or whether it is B&H Photo and you just want the simplest way on an Amtrak train because, I don't know, let's say you took your 10-pound tripod on a one-day trip to New York City with you and then you only then realize that you didn't have the plate that needs to be on the top of the tripod to connect it to your camera, so you have to spend $30 for another copy of the...
That's never happened to me. Oh, wait.
Didn't happen to me yesterday. No, sorry, Bob.
A scary thing is it shows up in your quick reply options, so it's even easier to accidentally send somebody money. Here's Matthew Panzerino's tweet with the iridescent effect that appears on your... Oh, wow. Ooh.
Those designers have so much
fun. It's like a hologram. So as you tilt or twist the phone, the colors... change on the card as if it were a real card.
But you know, it's what's has
the phrase "No, let's not do that. That would be a total waste of time and resources." Has that phrase ever been uttered inside?
Would it be delightful? That's the criteria. Would at some point somebody smile if they saw it?
That is what do you call those delightful provenances?
Moment of delight. Yeah.
Well, I love those.
It's interesting that the bind that Apple has put everybody in, and this is what people worry about when we talk about antitrust. I mean, Apple's not anywhere near antitrust with this, but the banks had a situation where when Apple Pay came out, if they didn't support them, most people will put a card into their Apple Pay, and then 90% of them will never put another card in. Like it's the one that they pay with on their Apple Pay. So the banks had to jump in, because if they didn't jump in, they were going to miss, they may get eliminated, from that person's use case. And then you have retailers who, balked at it to some degree. But then you have if you have retailers that are in a highly commoditized market like a drugstore. I know that when Rite Aid, I think, wasn't using it or whatever, I just stopped going because there's a Walgreens right across the street, and I can just go to that one, and I don't have to deal with it. So they pressured a lot of the people, and it's got to freak banks out to see Apple put anything that looks like a credit card on the thing that is not a credit card has got to. If it doesn't worry MasterCard and Visa and American Express, it should.
It was funny because right away, Georgia started texting me $5, $5, $5. And I can point out that does not work. You have to authorize it. You can't just have an annoying friend try to take money from you.
The number one emoji, at least among iPhone users, is tears of joy. But I think of that more as Ruffle, rolling on the floor laughing, kind of.
That's right? The tilted one. The 45-degree one is technically rolling.
So this is, I'm just so happy I could cry? What is this?
Right to the next one.
I tend to read that as 2017 has finally broken my sanity, that I just cannot stop hysterically and tragically laughing at everything that I see every single day.
Oh, Holly. That's what that is. Oh, Holly.
The folks at Mac Rumors called our friend Jeremy Burge, who's the vice chair at Unicode's Emoji Subcommittee. Jeremy's been on our show several times talking about emojis. He says and he runs Emojipedia. He says that pretty much is what's number one on Emojipedia. In fact, the Apple list pretty much tracks with Emojipedia. It's a face with tears, then heart, then face crying, then love eyes, then blowing a kiss, then, I don't know, looking upwards, I don't know. He says the only one that...
Rolling your eyes.
He says the only one that is very popular with Apple users, but not so much on Emojipedia, is the skull. The skull.
It's very metal.
You're dead to me.
Apparently, the Apple users like to send skulls. This is using Apple's new differential privacy technology, by the way.
My mom uses that thinking face all the time. Since it came out, I keep getting texts from her. Thinking face.
This one, the you're rubbing your chin.
Are you running late? Yes, mom, I am. Yes.
I can't wait till those are animated. That's all I'm saying. That I can sit there and have the little guy
with
go like
my
this.
With my mouth and my eyes.
Yeah, but you can sit there and be talking while you're like, I'm just thinking about this for a second, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it.
Can you write that app? You could write that app.
I'm not going to write that.
Go to work. get one of your people to do it.
The key is to learn when to say no.
Just in time for my birthday, Pixelmator on November 29th is giving me a gift, and all of us. Ooh. The new Pixelmator Pro. We've seen a lot of teases for that on the Pixelmator site. $59. Yeah. This is using Core ML, which is Apple's machine learning tool set. Interesting. What do you think?
They do great work. They do great work.
Are we excited?
Oh, yeah.
Could turn that music down, I would. Okay.
I think that we are definitely getting to a point where Adobe's starting to see some serious competition.
This is a huge opportunity.
There's a huge market there that a lot of people are trying to get themselves into. And I think Adobe's having, they're obviously still the standard.
With the change in Lightroom, now it's a subscription-only product. You know who's really benefiting? Pixelmator somewhat, but companies that make Lightroom clones.
Right.
That's Affinity Photo, which we really like from Serif. Serif says, yeah, we're working on adding the one thing that's missing from Affinity Photo that Lightroom has, which is managing your photos. They call it digital asset management, or DAM.
And Aperture is still dead. How ironic.
Aperture. Yeah, here's Apple, you missed the boat. I'm sure, I don't know if Pixelmator is planning that. Mac Fun, we've talked about Mac Fun many times. I like their Luminar product. I think it's really nice, but it doesn't have DAM. They say they're adding that early next year. And they've made that, interestingly, Windows as well as Mac, even though their name is Mac Fun. I think they're changing their name.
I think for most people, I think that they could, using Pixelmator or Affinity, I think that both of those, if I was getting started, I would get started on those. People talk about Photoshop Elements, and I would never get Photoshop Elements because it's purposefully kept behind. You know, rather than being, you know, Pixelmator and Affinity, you're getting into an ecosystem where they're gunning for, you know, for Photoshop. People like me, I still use Photoshop, because I've been using it since 1991.
It's muscle memory.
Yeah, I just like, I have the other two, and I do things like Affinity is the only app that can properly remove tripods from 360 photos if you're using a Theta. I think Pixelmator is great, and the performance is really great, and we put it on all of the our company machines, but I still use Photoshop. All our company machines, we don't get Photoshop for it. We just get Pixelmator, because most of what you need to do is fix a little photo or paint something out or whatever. You don't need Photoshop to do that, and so all the company machines have Pixelmator. A handful of us have Photoshop because we know how to use it. If you don't, like, I'm not going to teach anybody in the company how to use Photoshop. If they don't come knowing how to use it, they're not going to get Photoshop.
This might kind of win you over. They're also doing Vectormator. They're going to go after Illustrator with a vector graphics program. This is for the Mac.
What a clever name.
I have to admit that I still think that Illustrator 6 was pretty much the pinnacle of Illustrator, and then after that it just got heavy and difficult and painful and
You might like, actually, by the way, Vectormator is in Pixelmator.
Yep.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah. So, but I think Pixelmator Pro is going to be a must buy on November 29th.
And not to take anything away from these companies, because they are brilliant and they work super hard, but there are so many technologies that they can benefit from Core Animation to Core ML to Metal to all those things that just give them a head start into being competitive.
And again, I think Photoshop and Illustrator have a very useful position where there's a lot of high-end designers and so on and so forth that you need all those crazy tools, and all the crazy stuff is a reaction to a request. But the learning curve now is so high on most of those. I think it's...
Yeah, that's why I wonder how long it's going to be before these sort of apps seem old hat, where there is an explicit toolbox of tools to use to apply to the image, as opposed to... There's enough machine learning going on in the background. There's enough these apps, particularly an app like Photoshop, particularly Instagram, particularly apps that see millions and millions of photos routinely, to know pretty much what someone wants to do with a photo of someone holding someone hugging their spouse in front of the Eiffel Tower. It's like, you definitely want the faces to be brightened up. You definitely want to see those clouds in the background. You definitely want people to see that's the Eiffel Tower. As opposed to, okay, we're going to mask this off. We're going to put the slider so that we're changing the luminance of the blues. And I think that we're working towards an era where there will be no sliders whatsoever. It will just be something like an enhanced version of the assistant in Google Photos, where it will just simply, you take pictures, and then by the time you get back to your hotel, it gives you a wallet of photos that says, here's some stuff that we did with your photos, pick the ones that you like, and we'll add them to the library. And with the added ability of saying, I like this, but I have notes, and it asks you, okay, well, rub your fingertip on the parts that you wish were different, and we'll try to, we know what people don't like about things, but they don't like things. It's, I think we're moving towards, for the most part, automatic. There's enough computing power and enough knowledge that it can just sort of generate different versions of a picture and then leave it to the human to pick the version of the photo they like, as opposed to giving them the obligation of figuring out how to fix the photo to look exactly the way they want to look it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could have it where you say, I want this person and this person standing next to each other, and I want this background, and it takes it just comps them in front of the background, and it takes the color from the background and recolor relights them so that it they match each other and they look like they belong to that. And I don't think that that's very far away.
How far away from me saying, actually, you know what? I took that selfie with my sunglasses. The reflection in my sunglasses is actually a much better picture. Could you like correct for the distortion and make that into a picture?
Yeah, Zoom, exactly. Resolve. Zoom, resolve.
Enhance.
Yeah, exactly.
Resolve.
Enhance.
Gentlemen, get your picks ready. We're going to wrap things up with your picks of the week in just a second. But first, a word from our sponsor, VideoBlocks by StoryBlocks. This is something you can all use. VideoBlocks is great if you need a quick soundbite or video. You need an After Effects a template. You need motion backgrounds. Video. And by the way, we've used a lot of these kind of clips. I know you do, Alex, too. And they're expensive. These royalty-free clips can add up to quite a bit, or you pay a monthly fee of hundreds of dollars. Oh boy, when we found VideoBlocks, we went crazy. 1 year, unlimited use. 1 year, $149. 1 year, you get 115,000 plus studio quality HD videos, After Effects templates, motion background. Take a look at it, sound clips. And everything you download is royalty free for commercial and personal use, and yours to keep forever. They are always adding new clips. That's not all. You also get a very nice feature. They have a marketplace, which I love, because the creators get 100% of the sale price. So it's really just they provide a place for creators to put clips. And you'll save 40% as a member and have access to an additional 5 million videos. The artists get the money. You get the break. Everybody's happy. I love VideoBlocks. Stop using footage with watermarks. Come on, man. VideoBlocks has been used by over 90,000 customers, including big boys like NBC, National Geographic, the History Channel, the Travel Channel. Now you should be using it in your productions, on your blog, in your podcasts. Go to videoblocks.com/MacBreak. All the stock video you can imagine, $149 a year. Be brilliant on a budget. $149 a year. I don't even know how they do that. VideoBlocks.com/MacBreak to save on millions of studio quality clips from VideoBlocks. You know, it's nice knowing that you've paid for it and you can use as much as you want because you don't hold back. You use it more. You find more uses for it. It's not going to cost you to use this. I love it. VideoBlocks.com/MacBreak from StoryBlocks. Renee Ritchie, pick of the week, my friend.
Snapchat spectacles. No, wait.
No, right there. There's quite a few available if you want in the warehouse.
No, yeah, they're having a bad day. Oh, so my actual pick is CardHop. Now, ooh, CardHop, you might
I
be familiar
it
with.
I love these guys.
It is, yeah. I've been hearing about this for a while because I talked to Michael Simmons from Flexibits every once in a while. And, you know, he was just saying, we're working on this. And I'm like, what could they possibly do? It's a contact app. It is more boring than Calendar. What could you possibly do with it? And he's like, just you wait and see. And then I got in on the beta. And first of all, their icon is spectacular. It's David Lanham from the Icon Factory. And it's a BLT sandwich with a contact card stamped on it and a bite taken out of it, which is just fantabulous. But what they did is they didn't make a contact app. They made sort of like a connection launcher. So it sits up in your menu bar and it's got everything that was great about Fantastical, which is very quick natural language querying and input. But it's applied to people now. So you can, for example, you can see your recents and you can see birthdays if that's what you have set up. So that's fine. But I never use it that way. I just start typing. Like I could type Leo email and it'll start an email to Leo. I can type Leo call and it'll use either call relay or FaceTime calling to call you. And it makes it almost like Spotlight or Alfred or Quicksilver for connecting to people. And you can add data too. So if I say like, if I find out Andy was born on Christmas Day, I can start typing Andy Anako, December 25th, and it'll offer to put that in as his birthday. Or if Andy, you know, if Alex gets a new, an Animoji based email address, I can start typing Alex, Animoji@alex.com, and it'll just offer to make that. I can keep typing work and it'll make that his work address. And your fingers never leave the keyboard. It's immediately, you can set a shortcut key. So you just hit that shortcut key, start typing, hit the button, and you're connecting to anybody you want in any way that you want. And you never see duplicates. You never see just email-only contacts. You never see any of that garbage that you have to wade through in traditional contact applications. You just see the sort of information that's immediately actionable. And you don't even have to stop to click on it because you can launch it all right from the app. And I'm effusing about it because I hate the people at Fluxbit so much because I don't have an excuse not to use my calendar anymore. And now I don't have an excuse not to use contacts anymore. And they've like forced this productivity on me by making delightful applications, Leo. And frankly, I'm sick of it. I'm sick of these.
I'm sick and tired of it. Yeah, I bought Fantastical 2 and Card Hop at the same time, have them both in my menu bar. Yeah, you would think, what do I need? I get a calendar and contact manager. I don't need another one. But they really did a great job. I really am impressed. They do, and it's beautiful, as all their stuff is.
It looks great, and it works so fast.
Yeah, very, very
I don't
nice.
Even look for people. Because the problem previously was like, I want to contact Leo. Which app do I use? Like, I have to think about, do I want to email him? Do I want to message him? Do I want to FaceTime him? Then I go to the app, and then I have to again remember who I was. And this sounds like it's a stupid problem, but you have to, every time you change context, the human brain is not good at that. And you might get, oh, look, a tweet happened, then I'll forget about it. And with this, I know it's Leo, and then I just keep typing, and I get the method I want to contact him by, and it's so fast.
Very nice. Alex Lindsay, I bet you have something jolly good for us today.
Two things. One little more expensive. So I'm really into power cables for my devices, and this one is the best one I've gotten so far. So have you? I don't know if you've seen this.
Oh, it's braided.
I'm really into braided, so I like braided.
I do this too. They don't get tangled
Nomad
easily. They feel
ultra
tougher.
Ultra rugged lightning, and it's ultra rugged.
Is it my MFI?
It's MFI.
Okay.
And
so it charges and data and everything.
Yep. It does it all. And it's
look how
burly.
Tough this is. It's just burly is a good word for it.
Yeah. So you always know it's yours.
I have to say, Apple's cables are not very robust.
No.
I need something better. This is good. How much though?
It's like $30.
Yeah. They're a little pricey, but you know what? You're getting something nice that won't break.
I use it a lot. I like I wasn't sure if I'd like this little rubber attachment, but it actually is
nice.
Oh,
no. That keeps, yeah.
There's a couple of them I have that are like leather.
Leather? I don't want leather.
I don't want to know.
A leather attachment.
Have you seen my leather cable? Oh, a leather attachment. Yeah. This is Nomad, Nomad. Can you get them on? I bet you can get them on Amazon.
Amazon, that's where I got it. Yeah. And it's
nice.
They make ones that are like both, they make them a lot of different cables, but that one works really great. And then the other thing that I've been just starting to play with that I'm quite happy with is the new Theta. So
there's a new one. God dang it.
Yeah, I know exactly. So I think this
I just bought the first two of them. Now I got another one.
This is another one. So the big advantage here is 4K. So it's 4K video. So the still is the same. It's not going to be still the same resolution as it was before. So they haven't changed the chip. What they're doing is I think they've changed the processing so that you can now do 4K video rather than just 1080p video.
Right.
Which is really what was missing between the Theta and the Samsung, the Samsung was always a lot higher resolution on the videos. It can stream. I haven't been able to get that to work yet. But that's that. And then also it has a little surround mic, which I haven't really used heavily yet.
Oh, that's
but,
neat.
So you can have this
that's
little...
one thing that a lot of these inexpensive 3D cameras don't do is surround audio. And I really like I think that's fairly important.
And the thing to know is that if you're uploading the videos, both Facebook and YouTube support,
natively.
You can definitely put surround sound,
ahead of time. Do they do the surround audio also natively? Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So this is you can do. So it's
less than an Osmo.
It is. It is, and I have that too. So anyway, so
by
but
the way, they killed that.
The Osmo?
Yeah. No kid did.
Oh, you mean the Ozo?
Ozo.
No. Yeah. So the that's a long story. But I spent.
You
anyway,
spent hundreds of thousands of dollars. On
I also Ozos. Made hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Okay,
it was fine.
Never
it was
mind.
Like I
okay.
I didn't lose any money on
okay,
it.
Okay.
So
okay.
But and I continue to. So the issue. Yeah. The Ozo is
sad.
Not being developed. Their player is still being developed. It's still the only player that can do 4K per eye. So the Ozo is still for live production. I'm not going to replace my Theta with an Ozo. So if I want to do multi-camera live 4K per eye kind of work, there's still only one camera to use, and it's not made anymore. So, hopefully someone will step into that void.
Nice.
Anyway, but the this is what I carry around.
Affordable.
I don't
what
put
is
the
this, what does the audio plug-in cost
don't remember.
It's like 450.
You know, I hit update thinking it was going to take 10 minutes. It's been like 40 minutes.
He's been doing High Sierra this whole time.
I thought it was going to take like 10 minutes. And
$429.95 for the camera.
And I think it's like $200 for the surround sound mic.
I think the surround thing really sells it.
It's great because it's built for it. It pops right in. We have the Sennheiser, which is really great. You know, it's got the four little mics
to mix it
again,
in.
Again, this is great for me to be able to just throw it in my bag and pull it out. And
nice.
So it's good.
I hate you.
I'm an expensive friend. That's all I can say.
I bought the Mavic Pro last time you were here, which I love.
I just wish Alex got commissioned.
I haven't tested the X7 yet for the Osmo or for the Inspire and the Osmo. I haven't. I'm working on getting that, and then.
There it is.
Yeah,
$269.95. So that's not an inexpensive package.
No, but it's pretty great. Pretty great footage and sound for that price.
4K 360 video
with surround sound audio. Wow.
If I only had.
But you could do 4K. It's not. It's not that it's new. The 4K was. Samsung had 4K before, and the Garmin has 4K. It's just that the Theta form factor is still, I think, a better form factor to be able to just use it in a lot of different ways.
I agree.
Is it HDR? Is it like 10-bit 4K?
No, it's not.
Come on.
Oh, we still have room then. I'm not buying. I have an excuse not to buy it right now. Then.
There you go. There you
good
go.
Good point. I'm waiting for
it's not 4K.
HDR version.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. You're safe.
Thank you, Renee.
There you go.
Andy Anatko, pick of the week.
I have to guess that the line outside the dumpster outside your office is longer than the line to get an iPhone 10 on opening day. I know that I would be there like at 2 in the morning with my the same flash.
We are going to do we are stacking stuff up, so we're finally by December where we should have all the stuff in the warehouse that we're getting rid of, and we haven't figured out what platform we're going to use, but it's going to be great.
That's, by the way, Furball wants to know, is that an Alex? That's an Alex.
Yes, it is an Alex.
It's almost exactly an Alex. All right, Andy.
Oh, okay, so...
What do you want me to buy now?
Ulysses version 12, text editor for iOS and macOS. Yeah, the version 12 came out a couple of weeks ago. I've only gotten around to recommending it this week. It's a really strong update. There's individual features that are nice. But I think the biggest thing is that I love iOS apps that look like they were written from the ground up for iOS 11, as opposed to a Mac app that was somehow translated to iOS or an iOS 6 app that they keep just simply adding compatibility features to. It really is. It shows you how beautiful iOS 11 can be with not just with touch, but also with 3D touch, with trying to make use of typography as opposed to like graphical elements that teach you where the things are in this app. If you haven't used Ulysses before, it really is a great text editor. It's not just an open file, edit file, close file. It lets you deal with collections of documents, like if you're doing chapters of a book or if you're doing essays for a specific class. It allows you to really think of what you're writing as libraries of content and organize them quite effectively. It's also extremely clean. It's also one of the best cross-platform apps I've seen ever, where if you decided that you're going to use an iPad as your notebook computer, but you're still going to have a Mac at home, it is practically a seamless operation. You'll be putting fingerprint smudges on your Mac screen because you expect the screen to interact with your touch because of how clean a translation it is between those two platforms. It's such a big improvement that it is kind of side by side now with my other favorite word processor that's called cross platform, which is Scrivener. You've heard me praise this one too. I don't think that there's a winner in this race. I think that Scrivener is has two major advantages. One of which is it is a true what you see is what you get text editor, whereas Ulysses is all about Markdown. So you're not going to necessarily see formatting changes. You're not going to see heading one, heading two, heading three. It really is Markdown keynotes. A lot of people feel that that's actually faster because they're not taking their hands off the keyboard to make style changes. I mean, one of the it's such an aggressive change that one of the big changes in Ulysses 11 is that if you put a picture between two paragraphs, now you can see the picture in the document that you're editing. Okay, not in color and black and white, but you can now see the picture and not just a URL placeholder for what goes there. Whereas Scrivener behaves more like what people expect a word processor to look like. The other thing that Scrivener does better is that sometimes it's not all about documents that you're preparing for one book that I'm writing. I've got PDFs, I've got JPEGs, I've got .mov files, I've got URLs, so that all the research that I'm doing is right at hand and bundled together with the thing I'm working on. That's not really Ulysses' strength. But for people who have to write, and a lot of things that are related to each other, such as, again, essays in a school course you're taking, or chapters in a book, or sections of a report, Ulysses is very, very strong. It also makes it very, very easy to export it in a format that's going to be useful to you, including a WordPress post. It's, again, very, very polished, very, very nice. Another thing that I like, that it was a little bit controversial, it seems to be controversial every time a publisher does this, they are moving to a subscription model. So instead of buying it outright, as you can do with Scrivener, it now costs $40 a year or $5 a month. And some people are complaining that, well, that means that I'm never not paying for this app. It's going to cost me, over the course of a few years, it could cost me as much money as a Microsoft Word might have or used to. I like to hear when company does that, not because I like spending more money for an app, but because I like it when an app I like is going to be on the sort of financial footing where they can continue to pay their developers and pay their marketing and continue to put more features and development into this. Because clearly, you compare the iOS 11 version, Ulysses 12, with the previous edition, so much work and thought had to go into this to make this happen. And I'm glad that someone didn't have to deliver newspapers at 5 a.m. and work the fryer at the Chicken Hut so that they can afford to get home at 11 p.m. and put in 5 hours of development on this app. So I think it's worth the money they asked for, because not to the same extent that Alex can sometimes buy a $100,000 thing and make money off of it. It is the sort of thing where if you write for your professional work or for pay, it's money that you will make back in the productivity and the inspiration that you get from using it. So Ulysses is definitely my. You can get it at ulyssesapp.com. It's also on the iOS App Store and the Mac App Store.
Mr. Andy Inocco, Mr. Rene Ritchie, Mr. Alex Lindsay, you guys are awesome. Thank you so much for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly around about 11 a.m. every Tuesday. That time shifts around a little bit. And as you know, we are no longer on daylight saving time. So 11 a.m. Pacific, while still 2 p.m. Eastern, is now 1900 UTC. Adjust your schedule accordingly. You can watch live at twit.tv/live. Join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. Even join us in studio if you email tickets at twit.tv. Have a nice studio audience today. If you can't watch live, visit live, listen live. You can always get it on demand. Audio and video available at twit.tv/mbw. But the best thing to do would be subscribe so you get every episode delivered directly to your beautiful new iPhone X. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you next time. And now, my friends, get back to work, because break time is over.